Yeah, you're right.
You know, like, what's funny is with a live panel, we're already live. We're streaming live right now.
We are live?
We are live, guys. Word. We're not going to do the bumper music and bother these folks with their bumper music. Welcome to the Wing House here in Tampa. Thanks to Aaron and the crew here for welcoming us. This is the joint What the Buck and Bucks Brief podcast. We are very happy to have you guys out here. I'm sure our tech guys will get back over here. We'll get the microphones going. But for those of you who are wondering why someone's talking in the back, we are doing a Buccaneers panel right now. We're going to do some checks because we can't hear anyone in the headphones, apparently.
No, I can't hear anything.
All right, we're going to get that fixed.
This isn't getting any signal. It was just getting the signal. What the hell?
Yeah, I had it earlier. There we go. There,
it's on.
There we go.
And I'm high.
It wasn't tight enough, he said coyly. Can you hear it now?
Turn you down.
I can hear it.
All right. So, yeah, so we're doing a Buccaneers panel back here. We have assembled some of the greatest minds in Buccaneer football, or at least the guys who were available to come to Wing House on Wednesday night. We have, to my left, the one, the only ginger badass, Mark Cook of Pewter Report fame, editor-in-chief, wherever the chief's available to be.
Sometimes
in.
Sometimes I'm editor-and-chief.
Oh, you're the chief.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Which works good since the Redskins are coming up.
Welcome to the panel with the Redskins. Yeah, we should talk about the name because apparently that's something people want to talk about. Directly to his left is the owner, creator, founder of BucksBrief.com, Chris Fisher.
That makes me sound like so official, like I'm a big shot.
Well, you wore a button-down shirt, too, so that makes you. Everyone else wore T-shirts.
Yeah, dress up.
Thank you for dressing up the panel.
Really, you just paid $8.99 like a GoDaddy site, and all of a sudden you had a site.
Exactly.
And yet, everybody's an internet blogger these days.
And yet it put him at least 30 viewers ahead of Corey Long, ladies and gentlemen. Oh. Who is not only an excellent football mind, previous recruiting czar for ESPN, so he actually has legitimate credentials.
Yeah, I have real credentials.
He has real credentials, not hack credentials like Chris and I, or even pseudo credentials like Mark.
I've actually earned a check in the business.
So oh, look at that. But and still he's a Jets fan, but he also is a great reporter on the Lightning, the voice of the Lightning for someone, but I don't know who. So if you're a Lightning fan, Corey Long is someone you're probably following. So we will at some point be joined, allegedly, by the one, the only Sean King. When he shows up, we'll make fun of him appropriately.
Yeah, his poker game hasn't ended yet.
I would love to play poker against Sean King. I can't imagine him being good at poker.
No, he sucks at poker. He's good at losing money, though. He's excellent at that.
Well, that's absolutely true. Anyway, welcome to the show. For those of you, we are streaming live, so we got folks in the chat room coming across from all across the country and sometimes across the world. So tonight's show is going to be all about the Bucks, where we're at now, what we've shown so far as a team, and yes, we use personal pronouns, at least some of us do, so get used to that. I know Mark doesn't because he's a pro and he makes fun of us for it, but that's okay.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about those sorts of situations. There's a lot of discussion around Tampa Bay. We seem to be a bit on the manic side as a fan base. I would say that as if it were new, but it's not. So we'll talk about the manic nature of the Buccaneers fan base and the fact that right now they are not standing on the skyway to jump off. But with a loss in Washington, I expect there to be a large line waiting to do that very thing. But before we get started, I want to thank all of our sponsors, especially Wing House of Tampa, Elder Ford of Tampa as well, Steakhouse Elite, and we'd like to thank the crew of Blackbeard's Revenge as well. Oh, look at that. The Prima Donna just showed up, too. So we'll get him on here as well. If you would like to participate, you can participate via the chat room. You can tweet us at WhatTheBuck. You can also follow us at WhatTheBuck. We got at Pewter Report or at Mark Cook 1970 over here. You got at Bucks Brief and at Corey Long. And then at Real Sean King, who just stepped into the scene as well. He's making his way around the room saying hi to everybody.
He's signing autographs.
This is going to be very much a panel discussion.
Championship everyone,
look at him rocking that Yahoo shirt. You look so famous. Look at that. Good to see Sean King in the house. So the roundtable format is, in my opinion, one of the more fun things that we get to do because all these guys do know football. So it's not necessarily in the first hour going to be about like talking at you, it's gonna be talking with you because everyone here is gonna have an opinion. And I
did
know
you
that
say
Chris,
first. Does that mean there's a second hour?
There's a second hour.
You don't have to be here, man. If you got a curfew,
yeah,
we're gonna be here from 8 till 10, and then we're probably gonna drink after that because we're grown folks.
Well, hopefully so, Uber knows where Pinecrest is.
Uber does know where Pinecrest is. Don't worry about that.
I'll be here as long as the Mets are winning.
Well, that's good. That's good. So at any rate, Chris, I know you had some stuff on defense. There's been a lot of chatter so far about the Buccaneers defense. With Lovie Smith coming back, that was going to be the hallmark. It's taken a while for things to get started, despite having some great names. And now, allegedly, we are top five defense. Chris, is that what you found out you're studying?
This is the headline, right? This is what everyone's sharing. The Buccaneers said they have a top five defense right now. And that's if you look at yardage, right? A total yards per game. But I think anyone who has watched the game and Bucs fans and anyone who follows this team knows that I haven't seen a top five defense this year. So, but that's what we're reporting on right now, right, Mark? I mean,
when two teams score over 40 points, That's when you can keep the yardage low. I mean, you know, especially when you turn the ball over, you're throwing pick sixes, those kind of things, because at that point, you know, teams are going to run the ball. I mean, like Marcus Mariota, for instance, what, threw 16 passes in that first game. Cam didn't throw a lot of balls like that. So that kind of skews things a little bit. But to play devil's advocate, when you talk about, well, you know, scoring defense being next to last, you know, that's the standard when we talk about that dominating defense of the SAP years and Brooks and those guys. It was based on total yardage. It wasn't, you know, a top 10 score. I don't know what the scoring was. It probably was also a top 10 or pretty close to it. But I mean, that's what they did use. I mean, they didn't go by the total yardage stat. But I agree with you that, you know, nobody, the eyeball test does not say this is a top 10 or a top 5 defense.
Well, and the things that Lovie Smith focuses on is what? Third down completion percentage, points against, right. Takeaways, correct?
Right. Yep.
And they're towards the bottom of the league in each of those.
And he said that this week. I mean, we asked Rick Stroud, in fact, asked him about that on yesterday. And Lovie was, you know, he said, look, we're not very good at certain things. And
would you say
know,
they're a top 32 defense?
31 and a half.
Okay, top 31.5.
31.5 right now in scoring defense. And, okay. And ultimately, that's all that matters, really. I mean, if you give up chunks and chunks of yards, that's okay if you keep them out of the end zone. The Bucs have done just the opposite. And that's what was so great about Sean's defense when he was part of this team was they would give up some yards between the 20s. But, boy, they really got tight inside that red zone. And that's the difference between winning and losing football games defensively anyway.
And I think we have to be careful not giving them enough credit. I know sometimes this defense doesn't pass the eye test, but – I mean, you are what your ranking says you are, right? You know, Parcells said it famously, whatever your record is, that's what you are. So, I mean, wherever they're ranked right now as a defense, that's what they are. You look around the National Football League, it's not a lot of great defense being played. I mean,
I think Tennessee, Chris looked this up, I think Tennessee's number two, right? I mean, they've got one win.
Yeah. I think the thing that has, and when you look at our two losses, the Houston and Tennessee, the narrative for this season could be so different. We could easily be sitting 4-2 right now. You know, we just played a little better in those games, but you know, I think they're talented. I think they've made some plays. I think because the offense has turned the ball over a lot in a few games, the record isn't indicative of overall how well the defense has played.
Well, and bringing up record is the interesting piece because the stats only matter when you don't want to look at the record, right? We look at the stats to try and get trends and patterns and these sorts of things. And you know, the phrase stats are for losers was popular here for a while. And we like stats when they help us. We don't like stats when they don't. At the end of the day, the defense has to come up big at big times in the game. And we were watching the game last time at home, and who was it? It was Corey who made a comment about our shirts being outdated because we won a home game for the first time since Buffalo 2 years ago, which was great. But the reality was during that game, there were times where I was like, okay, the defense really needs to. This is one of those times where the defense has to do what the defense does for Tampa. They need to create a turnover and do something spectacular. They need to get a stop. And the defense is starting to do some of those things. Like, I don't care at all what our stats are as long as the win column keeps going up.
Right. I mean, that's ultimately what you're judged by. I mean, you're not making the playoffs at the end of the year based on your defensive ranking, your offensive ranking. Now, obviously, a lot of times when those things are good, obviously that increases your odds. But it is ultimately wins and losses. And you know, look, the Buccaneers win this game at Washington, a very winnable game. They're sitting at 3-3, and they are literally right in the middle of the wild card playoff thick. I don't think they're catching Carolina by any stretch unless Cam goes down and there's a ton of injuries on that defense. But you know, they can make a run at a wild card spot, certainly, if they can, you know, play 500 ball and a little bit better going down the stretch.
Well, and from a fan perspective, you know, the total team has to come together. We're going to talk a little bit about defense. And right now, one of the things that we're not talking a lot about is the injuries. And we got guys like Jonathan Banks hopefully coming back. We've got the mystery of Altron Werner, right? That's going to go down in the annals of football, I think, about why this guy's not playing. But maybe you guys know. Actually, let's start with that one, Chris. I don't know about you. What is up with Jennings? How is he still getting the burn he's getting based on what's happening on the field? And who did Altron Werner piss off?
I think you have to understand the relationship that Tim and Lovie have. Tim was with Lovie in Chicago when they were excellent on defense. So I think there's a trust that he has in Tim and what Tim's capable of doing. The question becomes, is the 2015 Tim Jennings anything like the Tim Jennings that Lovie had in Chicago? And I think that's what Lovie's trying to find out.
Yeah, I just interrupt there. I mean, you watched that Jacksonville game, and I was there in person, came back and watched it you know, on the All-22. And it was even worse. I mean, he got abused in that game. But you're absolutely right. Lovie, and I'm not just saying Lovie. I'm sure any coach would be the same way. The familiarity a guy that knows the system that you're not going to have to spend a lot of time teaching. But then ultimately, though, just because you know it, I mean, again, Rondé Barber knows the system. He's not necessarily going to perform at his age if he were to come back. And so Jennings, you know, a 31-year-old Jennings is not the 25-year-old Jennings that Lovie had at one time.
Well, you mentioned the fact, too, because Chris Conte was one of these guys, too, that Lovie was comfortable with, got some playing time early in the year when really a lot of folks were watching. He was injured all of training camp, watched training camp, said, how did he even get a roster spot? And then he ends up being a starter. One of the things that I'm interested in seeing, if Jonathan Banks does come back this week, because the questions that we continue to get is, who sits when Banks goes back? Does Verner stay at the nickel, and who do you start opposite Jonathan Banks?
I think Jenkins takes a seat, to be honest with you. Now, Lovie likes Mike Jenkins. Jason Light likes Mike Jenkins, but I think Jenkins would be the guy that would sit, and I think Banks would probably get that spot back. And I think Jennings at least starts again this week and sees what see exactly what happens.
Now, I like to keep everything in perspective, too. Let's not act like Jonathan Banks is Darrell Revis.
That's fair.
Jonathan Banks is a young cornerback who we're hoping develops into a top-level guy. So I don't want to put all that pressure like he comes back and all of a sudden the secondary is fixed. Like, we're still trying to find out who Jonathan Banks actually is as a player in this league. So I'm hoping that he comes back. We need him. But let's not put that kind of pressure on him. Like, he's back. Everything's right.
Well, and he's coming back off an injury as well. So, you know, he's not going to have legs necessarily. But one of the things, you know, depth is one of those things you have to have at some point. And usually you test it at the end of the season, not at the beginning. And right now in the secondary and where the defense is stacking up, we're testing it right now. So half Jonathan Banks, I think, still makes us better. Mike Jenkins still celebrates it when guys drop passes after they run by him, and that's a problem. That's not something you celebrate, I don't think, anyway. Now, on the safety position, again, you brought up a good point with Conte. Conte did not look particularly good early. Conte got a bad rap in Chicago, but if you read all the articles up there, his teammates loved him. They're like, he played injured constantly. But the guy knows the game, and when he's healthy, he's phenomenal. And we saw some of that here. Safety play in general, though, we don't have that hallmark right now. Tandy seems to know where the ball is, but we're not sure what's going on. What are your thoughts? And I'll throw this one at Mark first, and then everyone else can weigh in as well. Is Lovie still tinkering, or is he pretty much, does he know what he's got right now, and he's just trying to adjust the recipe a little bit?
They're still trying to figure out the right combination because they've had different guys hurt, you know, at different times during the year. I don't think that they've had, you know, really a good look at all of their secondary healthy at the same time. I mean, I'm surprised Sterling Moore's not playing a little bit more. That was a guy that they brought over from Dallas who kind of knew the system a little bit more and really was going to be that nickel cornerback. And now you're throwing in Altron Verner in that spot. But safety play, you know, I don't think Bradley McDougal's been particularly great. In fact, if you want to rank safety play, I think Chris Conte has probably been the most consistent guy in the secondary.
And that's because he's causing takeaways.
Well, and that's true. I mean, he had the, and if you notice in that Jacksonville game, he went out in the first half of that injury, and that's when Bortles really kind of caught fire too. But Sean can tell you this too. Look, we blame the secondary for a lot of these mistakes and these big yards, but when you watch the tape and you see Bradley McDougal being a half second late coming up, you know, defending the middle of the field, you got to remember there's a rookie linebacker in there too that's going to struggle a little bit, and he's certainly more athletic than Mason Foster was, and he's able to get on his horse and get back deep, but he still isn't 100% comfortable in this, and that can make the secondary look bad too, the linebacker play, if they're not where they need to be. And something I brought up on a show recently is Levante and Mason, I mean, they weren't just friends on the field. They hung out all the time, constantly. And they kind of knew what each other was going to do. And I think Levante, part of, you know, maybe his – I'm not saying he's not playing great or not playing well. But he's just not playing great with the splash plays. I think maybe a little bit of that is him also adjusting to a new guy in the middle, because that is your quarterback on the defense at the middle linebacker position. And Quan Alexander is a tremendous talent. He's a great athlete, but he's still a rookie linebacker.
I think what was interesting as I heard you talk was – I think what we're lacking right now is consistency. You know, you mentioned that Chris Conte probably has played the best overall, yet he takes a bad angle in the Jacksonville game when the play should have made. You were saying that Bradley McDougal really hadn't played well, yet he did a great job manning up against Greg Olsen, pretty much took him out in the game versus Carolina.
That's true.
He made the turnover on the interception versus Jacksonville. So I think that's kind of been the Achilles heel for all of these guys individually, is that they play well at times. We just haven't got consistent top-level performance that we expect.
Let me ask you this real quick, Sean. Again, I always like to get players' perspective. People talk a lot about chemistry and gelling, whether it's the offensive line or whether it's the secondary or whatever it is. How true is that? I mean, when you have a guy that's out, when you haven't played three or four games in a row with the same guy next to you, how difficult is that for offense or defensive players?
Well, chemistry comes from everybody doing their job. And I think until you evaluate the film as an individual and see that everybody's doing their job, it's tough to have on-field chemistry. And I don't think there's like a magic potion that you can pour in a cup and get it. It comes through failure a lot of times and learning from that failure and getting better. And hopefully that's what's going to happen this year. But I think the guys get along. I don't think there's any cancers in the locker room. No. But on the field, the chemistry comes from everybody doing their job. We were really good when I played on defense. It's because everybody trusted everybody. You know, because they watch the film every day, and you're supposed to be in the A-gap, you're in the A-gap. You're supposed to spill, you spill. You're supposed to set the edge, you set the edge. And I think every play is one or two guys not doing what they're supposed to do.
And anecdotally, when you hear players from that time period talk about it, a lot of that seemed to be self-governed, right? The players knew themselves. You had the guys who'd been there maybe a little bit longer, and they worked with the younger guys, and that's got to happen. Who are you guys seeing step up and be that role? You know Gerald McCoy is going to have that leadership role because of who he is, Levante David because of the name. But it's not always the names that you know who do that behind the scenes, right? And that's the part that I'm not seeing yet. It's not I'm not upset about it. I think it's going to come. But who do you guys think are going to be those guys who step up and get those guys to get on the same page?
I don't know. And I think they're going to have to do it through performance. I don't think the personalities are there that existed before. I mean, very rarely do you have a Hardy Nickerson with a Derek Brooks and a Warren Sapp, you know, in the middle of your defense. I mean, that's a core group of guys with a Lynch behind it,
right.
A Donnie Abraham, a young Rondae Barber. I mean, that really doesn't happen that often. So, I mean, you got some guys, and I think what's interesting is our best two players probably, you know, are our least aggressive personalities. You know, Gerald McCoy, Levante David, both
absolutely
nice guys off the field, you know, both affable and personable, you know, not really ornery, you know, not really kind of that Hardy Nickerson persona. You know, so I think it has to develop from performance. I don't know that alpha male personality exists right now with this collection of defenders.
I think he can with Quan. I don't know if you spent much time with Quan, but he's got a nasty streak in him.
He's got to play better first.
Well,
yeah.
No, I totally agree. And you know what? We talk about this all the time. You know, Jameis Winston establishing himself as that leader. But you have to have a resume before you walk into a locker room and command. You can't throw four interceptions in a game and start yelling at guys on the sideline. And Quan's the same guy. He's got to perform a little bit better before he can establish himself as that way. But he certainly has talent, and he has that little bit of an edge different than Gerald.
And let me qualify when I say Quan has to play better. Quan's very talented. He's unbelievably athletic. But you can't lead until you consistently do your job properly.
Yep.
And he's had a lot of missed assignments, even though he's made splash plays.
Sure.
And it's a shame we have to qualify that way, because I think folks should have known what you meant. When we do this sort of analysis, well, with the exception of Sean, no one here has played in the NFL, right? So you actually played at the best level. None of us have a chance at it. Quan Alexander is a unique talent. He's still learning. But we can tell when he's not doing the right thing after the fact. We're not trying to do it real time like he is, so it's a little bit different. Now, can we get Joe Hawley to play defense? Because there's a cat who's got some attitude, and I need a lot more of that in my life. And I don't mean to be rude, but EDS should not make it back on the field.
Yeah, you're not
going to
see him on
playing.
Sunday. Yeah, because Evan Smith's apparently just going to come back and resume his starting spot.
Yeah,
I'm
going to
smack you in the mouth.
Lovey kind of backtracked on what Dirk Cutter said last Wednesday before the break. He said, listen, let's get everybody back healthy and the best guy's going to play. You know, last year we were complaining and bitching about no depth. Now fans, in a sense, are complaining about, you know, there is some depth, in a sense, and which one of these guys is going to play.
No one's complaining about depth. We just want the best guy to play.
No,
I don't think it's the guy that they think is the best guy. If
right.
Logan Mankins gets back on the field right now, it's going to hurt my heart a little bit. I'm going to cry a little bit.
Will you want Kevin Pamphill?
I want anyone but Logan Mankins right
now.
Yes.
That's crazy.
Here's what
that's
I try and do
talk.
In those situations when guys are injured and the person that fills in for him plays well. I let the guy that was injured come back and play bad before I complain.
And you know what I said? I said, I think Evan goes back into the week as the starter in practice, maybe even starts the first couple series. But if he's underperforming, they're not going to have a problem with a quick hook because they know what they've got with Hawley. And, of course, you know, he certainly understands Dirk Cutter's system, being that he came from Atlanta.
And, Sean, one of the biggest critiques, and you're the only one on this panel who's played quarterback in the NFL, out of the shotgun,
will y'all
it seems.
Stop saying that?
Yeah, exactly. Like anybody has any doubt looking.
It's not
at
like
the other
my chair is more comfortable than y'all tonight.
One of the biggest critiques that Evan Smith has had is that it looks like his snaps are slow when we go shotgun, and Joe Hawley zips it back there. So it seems like what we've seen from early on from Evan Smith was that it kind of throws off the timing of the play. You have played quarterback. Do you have to have a center who is going to get the ball back to you quickly, or, you know, if it kind of lofts back there, does it throw off the timing of the routes or what?
I haven't necessarily seen that. Maybe I wasn't focusing on it enough, but, I mean, it was good enough for Aaron Rodgers. It should be good enough for Jameis Winston.
But here's the deal. It's the I would guess, and again, you're the only one that's played quarterback or in the
there
NFL,
you go.
By the way. But I'm sure Jameis can handle it.
He's buying me a beer. The next person that says
now
that
you know damn well Mark Cook ain't buying you anything.
Yes, he is.
I might buy Sean something. But anyway, listen, here's the deal. If Evan is slow on his snaps, that's okay as long as he's slow on every snap. You know, it's like a high snap or a low snap.
Let me butt in for a second, Mark. I think one of the phenomena, let me pronounce the word right, people will say I can't speak.
You can't.
Of getting injured or getting benched and watching someone else do your job better than you did it, the good players can learn from those situations. Because a lot of times when you're playing and you're doing something wrong, it's very hard to be tough on yourself. It's hard to look at you and say, I'm the reason that this ain't working. You know, it's so easy to put this on somebody else, the guard not stepping right. But then when someone else gets in and does it correctly and you're watching them do it, when you get back in, a lot of times you learn things from that situation that you couldn't learn if you would continue playing yourself.
Well, it'd be interesting. That self-evaluation is tough for everyone. It's not just limited to football players. So seeing the tape and seeing the comparative tape is probably very useful. And then there's people you probably trust. You don't necessarily know the folks that are tight on a team. And it may not be on the same team. I know I have a friend that played in the NFL. He'd listen to me. He'd listen to other people. And he'd listen to his coaches, certainly. But he knew he was going to get a call if he screwed up. And that really mattered. So to your point, that may be something that helps you guys out.
You know a good analogy for that? Indianapolis. Beginning of the year, Andrew Luck was holding the football. He was getting hit all the time. He had to miss two games. Matt Hasselbeck came, threw the ball in rhythm, got rid of the football, didn't take a lot of sacks. What happened when Andrew got back in the game? He's much more conservative. He's getting rid of the football because he saw someone else get in there and do it properly. And so, you know, I'm hoping that that's what happens with Evan Dietrich-Smith, even though he's a more experienced player.
In the offensive line, though, we know that it takes – there's got to be some continuity amongst those offensive linemen for them to start gelling. So if the screen game has started to improve over the last few weeks, if the offensive line play is kind of starting to get better week after week after week, why would you go back to a guy when you're starting to gel on the offensive line? And I'm not saying Joe Hawley is the greatest center in the NFL. There's been some ups and downs, but there seems to be more positives than negatives. I feel like you're going to throw off. We talked about consistency earlier. You want to get some consistency on the football field. Going back to a guy when your offensive line was kind of struggling a little bit, it seems like a question mark to me.
Well, and the colloquialism is, you know, you don't lose your position due to injury. These guys both played at a high level in the league. I like Hawley. I like his attitude. I think he's played well. But who knows if it's just a couple of games he's going to play well. I think what Sean said makes some sense. You let the guy come back in, see what he does. But the desire to have that effective offensive line is something you need for a young quarterback. You see the running game going against Jacksonville. People give us a bunch of crap for Jacksonville being crappy. But they had a pretty doggone good run defense. And they had about 37 guys in the box against us. And we still just ran the ball whenever we wanted.
And you know what? And Sean, because he's the only guy that is at the right side of the table right now. But, but you know, look, you're very intimate with this man in front of you. I mean, you're touching him in places his wife doesn't touch him, right? And so there's a comfort
level there.
You don't
really think about that, Mark.
Well, I do when I'm watching.
I never took a snap and have my hand on a man's butt.
Look, not that there's anything wrong with that.
You're misogynist, Tate. It's 2015. There's nothing wrong with that, people. So, but what I'm saying is look, does Jameis have a say in this as a quarterback?
None?
There's your answer.
Because these two guys are making the line calls, right? I mean, the quarterback and the
center. Yeah, the quarterback has enough going on. He's trying to call the play right, remember the snap count,
right?
You know, figure out even like what half of the defense is doing.
Did you even know who was snapping the ball to you?
If they changed the lineman during the game, I wouldn't know it.
Okay.
Yeah, that's the least of my concerns.
Fun fact, there was no center when Sean played. None at all.
Tony Mayberry was.
Tony,
was,
that's right.
Was most
Tony
of the time.
Mayberry.
And then we brought in Jeff Christie.
Yeah.
Yeah, then we finished brought in Jeff Christie.
The only Finnish player, is that what you just said? We have a crowd member, Spent, just said he's the only Finnish player, as in from Finland, not finished. Look at that. Fun fact. If you're wondering why Corey Long's not talking, because the Mets are playing and they're winning.
Yeah, he's enthralled.
He's very excited by this game they call baseball. I'm not familiar with it, except for when I go to sleep.
I wanted the Cubs to win simply because
Joe Madden.
When Back to the Future came out and they like went to 2015, it's crazy. They had the Cubs winning the World Series. So I was like, I just wanted to, thought it would have been cool.
It would have been. Chris from BucksBrief.com, you had a question you put on Twitter and Facebook today, Chris.
Us being hacks, we try to get creative at times because that's the only way we can get people to.
It's called fringe media, not hacks.
Yeah, there you go. Being it's National Back to the Future Day, I had this question. I posed it out to Bucks fans, is that if you could go back in time and pick any one Bucks player from their prime and put them onto this current roster, who would that be? And the majority of fans, I had some interesting responses. I had one Roman Oben that was kind of interesting. That came in on Facebook. The majority of the fans said Simeon Rice in his prime would turn this defense around.
I don't think that turn this defense around was necessarily – I think he'd make a hell of an impact, though.
Right.
Simeon Rice was a unique talent. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with the Hall when you look at what Simeon Rice was able to do. But what do you guys think?
I think it's the most logical fit for what they don't have. You know, Jock Smith has done a good job, but Simeon is that elite alpha dog pass rusher. You wouldn't really have to move anybody of substance out. I mean, you bring Brooks back. You have Levante David playing that position. You bring Sapp back. You have McCoy there. You know, so I think there's some other spots. I mean, how effective would John Lynch be in the NFL in 2015?
Right.
He would be broke.
You know, where you can't hit guys, you know what I mean? Right. So it makes a lot of sense with Simeon.
Mark? I agree that Simeon would be huge for this team. And Simeon will tell you he could still play. Unfortunately, I don't think anybody's going to give him a shot. But
he looks like it.
No, he does. He looks like he's in great
shape. I watched him
try
to play in the UFL, and he was wrong.
Didn't work.
Shout out to Simeon Rice and producing the movie. That's big.
I don't think
he's got enough credit for that.
How
I mean, a former
movie?
NFL player
he's
that went
never
and
been scared.
Produced and brought to actual film, right. Like to the movies, like a actual film, I think that's pretty impressive.
Is this movie on Netflix yet?
I don't know.
Amazon Prime? Anything?
I don't know. I don't know what the distro is on it, but it's still cool that he did it.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Is it straight to Betamax?
Oh, nice beta.
Like, reference. I have trouble video. Videos. I have trouble videoing laser something video on my phone and putting it to Twitter.
I can attest to that. You're challenged in that way.
Now, who would you pick?
No,
you're about to lead into this.
I like Simeon Rice, too. I think that's a good move. Because, look, when you're – okay, Howard Jones steps in off the street 2 weeks ago, and he ends up with two sacks in the game.
Unblocked,
by Smith,
the way.
Yes. Jacquees Smith was playing on the other side. He's your leading sacker from the edge as far as a pass rusher goes, as far as a defensive end. These are two guys that were on the street, you know what I mean, last year with Jacquees and also this year with Jones. That says a lot about how this team has drafted over the last few years. And, you know, because in particularly the
and
fact
they,
that
in,
they
in their defense, Mark, they have not really drafted defensive end.
I agree with that. But, and this year they didn't even address it at all in the
draft.
The
most unbelievable free agent bust for me was last year.
Oh, yeah, Johnson.
Michael Johnson.
Yeah, Michael Johnson.
Right.
Yeah.
Terrible.
I mean, when you watch how he played the year before in Cincinnati, you watch how he's playing this year in Cincinnati, what happened with Michael Johnson last year, I have no idea.
I could tell you that. Can I tell you that? I hear music. Does that mean there's a commercial?
It's Mike Pepper's outro music he's leading, okay. Ladies and gentlemen. The one, the only Mike Pepper.
See you, Pep.
See you later, Pep.
Take care, Pep.
Bye, Pep.
But
you know what happened?
Yeah.
What happened?
I don't know. Can I say it?
Say it. He don't work here anymore.
I mean, I don't know that. This is part of the situation.
It's a hot take.
Whether you want to believe it or not. Okay, Mike Zimmer wanted to bring Michael Johnson with him
to Minnesota.
To Minnesota.
Uh huh.
Told a member of the organization, you got to coach this guy a certain way. I mean, he's a and you know this for a certain reason, but you know certain guys have to be coached, treated a little bit differently. Joe Cullen's not the kind of guy that's going to give, any preferential treatment to anybody. And I'm not saying that that's the reason that Michael had a bad year, because he had some injury situation. But he, he's a different breed, man. And I don't mean a Simeon out there kind of breed. He's got a different, he does not like to play hurt at all. And I think that's a big part of it. I don't know that he really fit into the scheme. And this didn't mesh well with the coaching staff that they had.
Well, all I can say is moving forward, I hope that was a learning experience for Jason and for Lovie. Mm-hmm. That no matter how talented the guy is, we have to make sure that he's the right fit for who his coach is going to be, who his teammates are going to be, what our system is.
Well, in the free agent market and the draft, in a lot of ways, it's one of those things where you shop, you try and use all the data you have, and you take your role on it. And we remember painfully all the failures. We tend to ignore any of the successes because we expect success. We pay attention to the successes when they go somewhere else and ignore all the failures elsewhere, right? There's a lot of cats that go play other places and suck there, too. And we don't say a word about it, but we get one guy that goes have a good game somewhere else. It's like, these guys don't know what the hell they're doing.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Garrett Blunt's a great example. Yeah,
Jeremy Zutaw.
Yeah. Now, Jeremy Zutaw is a different example,
Donald
right?
Penn.
Donald Penn is
Michael
just dumb.
Michael Bennett, Aqib Talib.
You know damn well. I just got Sean fired up because he's been crying about Aqib Talib for 2 weeks.
Hey, Corey, that Revis guy is pretty good, right?
Hey, yeah, just don't go near Aqib. Like, he will punch you in the head.
I like Revis.
Yeah, he's a decent guy.
But you know what it speaks to? It speaks to one of the lowest points in Buccaneer history. because as an organization, we weren't prepared. We didn't have the infrastructure in place to handle those kind of personalities. And I think that was as much a part of their inability to be successful as anything that they did themselves. Like when Aqib Talib went to structure and automatically became a Pro Bowler. Went to New England, boom, no problems. Went to Denver with structure, no problems. Michael Bennett went to structure in Seattle, boom, Super Bowl. And I think that remember I said about failing to have them look in the mirror sometimes?
Right. Yep.
I think hopefully as an organization, we looked in the mirror and we won't be in those situations moving forward. How about Anthony Collins? I don't think Anthony Collins is in the National Football
League.
He's
not. He's on a beach in Jamaica right now.
And there are some of those. We remember all the successes, bills. But there's plenty of those too. But your comment about structure is interesting, and I think that's one of the hopes with Lovie coming in and with the staff he assembled and with the demeanor he had in his time in the league and in Chicago. This is a guy that does things his way, but not in a way that's as dictatorial as a Greg Schiano coming in from the college ranks. He tries to get the best out of people, but he knows who he wants. And sometimes he's going to do it, Tim Jennings, and he's going to make you scratch your head and go, what the hell? Why is this guy getting reps? I hope after about six games he starts playing like a Pro Bowler again, because right now he's not. But I got to trust in Lovie. And there are people that are literally calling for his head on a weekly basis, which floors me.
You can go to NFL.com right now and vote for Tim Jennings in the Pro Bowl. You can't vote for Gerald McCoy or Clint McDonald because they're not included in the ballot. But Tim Jennings you can go vote for right now because NFL.com programmers are that smart to not include Gerald McCoy.
He's balling, by the way.
I still don't know why they play the Pro Bowl, to be honest. But just give him an extra check and have a vacation because that's not a game.
You know what's so, just so frustrating with Gerald? Gerald's so good, and you still want him to do so much more.
People still complain.
Absolutely. Every day. And all those cats are calling him a bust have all disappeared. But, yeah, it's funny. You expect him to take over a game, and he does. He absolutely does. Every play, he's something they have to count for. And I remember Sapp back in the day, even at the end, like towards the end when there was that whole inflection point where it was Booger or Sapp and all the venom coming out. He said, even right now, every week coming into the game, they have to put 99 on the board and circle it and say what they're going to do about it. Right, and Gerald is that guy. They come in, they got a plan for Gerald. That's why guys like Jacquees Smith, guys like insert Howard Jones here, right? These guys have got to, when they get those singles, they've got to win.
How about Will Golston stepping up? I mean,
Will Golston definitely needs some credit.
I give him some credit, but he was non-existent in that Jaguars game, though. He got the start.
How many reps did he get at tackle versus end? I didn't check. Chris, did you see?
He was at the end the entire game.
I like him more at tackle with the bull rush he uses. He gets such push so far up, that pocket gets collapsed. I know we have to put him at end sometimes because of our depth right now.
Right.
But I don't know when Will Golston, I hope it wasn't the University of Florida tactic he used, because all of a sudden Cat got strong. He is killing
it's
people.
It's time to get paid. You see how that works? Guy doesn't play well, guy needs to get paid.
But he was busted up, though. Come on now.
I know I got to know Will a little bit, too. Will will tell you that Will's not a guy that sits in a meeting room and sees it on film. He's got to play. I mean, some guys learn it better actually doing it. And he told me that his second year that, you know, he needs to be on the field and playing.
I think all this cop out.
Well, it might be.
Yeah,
but I will say like this. Gerald, we talked to Gerald the other day about Will specifically, and he couldn't say enough good things. He said,
he's
this guy can be unblockable. His size, his unique combination of size and strength. Gerald said it's just mind-boggling. And in practice, he throws these guys around, and they're just waiting for it to translate really fully into being that complete player.
I'm going to throw this out there, and I'd be interested in what you guys think of it. And I hope it's something that moving forward, Jason and Lovie decide to do. I think we need more Florida boys on the team.
Like literally from the state of Florida or from the University of Florida?
Either from the state of Florida or from one of the big programs in Florida.
Yep.
When we were really good,
yeah,
our key players were from Florida.
Right.
That's what
you know why.
Florida boys are just
you
built.
You know why.
Florida boys are just built differently. I've been everywhere. I play football across this country. I've seen and done high school, and I know Corey can attest to this. Florida boys are just different.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, you don't have a lot of the extra stuff with Florida boys. Like, we want to play football. We want to win. Like, we got pride in winning. Like, you don't have to deal with all that. Got to coach us a certain way. You know, you got to pat us. Like, we need to get more Florida boys. Like, I love finding an Ali Marpet, but I'd be like, bro, you got to dig real deep in the tape box to get the Ali Marpet. Like, let's get some more Florida boys in here who got some pride in what's going on in Tampa.
Which surprised me that Jason didn't target some Florida State guys, you know, after the first couple rounds particularly, because, you know, that comfort level.
Cameron Irvin, Trey Jackson, those
guys I think could have helped. You know, even O'Leary on a practice squad, you know, maybe he could have been. a better receiving option than Brandon Myers the last couple of weeks with ASJ out. But you look at the success, and I'm not just because I'm a Florida State fan, but
sure.
You know, you look at even Carlos Williams, a mid-round draft pick guy who's done well up in Buffalo. PJ Williams at cornerback.
And you're making a good point, because let me ask a question.
Hey, wait, Matt Jones for you Florida fans.
Yeah.
Here's a guy.
Absolutely. Carlos Williams.
You're going to see him this week.
How many guys from Florida State, Florida, Miami end up being busts in the NFL? I mean, it's almost non-existent. I mean, when you really think about how many athletes they put into the NFL on a year-in, year-out basis, almost none of them are busts.
We have a relatively biased panel. Everyone here is
give me
I
names.
Agree with what your point is.
Yeah, give me names.
No, I hear you. I'm not disagreeing with you.
If you look at the current roster right now, Winston, Lewis Murphy, Major Wright, and Mike James out of Miami, who they don't list on the roster for some reason, but those are our Florida players right now.
Levante Davis from Florida.
Yeah, he's from Miami.
Yeah, it's Sean's going grow up in Florida, not necessarily went to Florida.
Yeah, either born in Florida or played at one in Florida. So, and the only reason I say this is because Florida guys are different. I'm just telling you, there's something about Florida boys.
And looking at it from a business standpoint, look, Rich McKay made a conscious effort to bring in guys like Jacquez Green and Riedel Anthony and Sapp and Brooks and those things because of that. You know, from a business standpoint, it's not necessarily you just do it just because you might want to sell a few tickets or make more connections with the fan base. But they're also talented football players. So to me, it's a win-win to do those type of things.
Now, Corey, you're the recruiting guru. When you were back with your recruiting chops, and I hear Jet and a bunch of the guys talk about Florida talent, whether they play here or play elsewhere. What was the word on the street about Florida talent? I mean, they seem to go off and do great things everywhere. Is this something that resonates with you?
Yeah, I think it was. And, Butch Davis was really the guy that said it best several years ago. Kind of different between Florida players and players from Texas, for example, is that Florida players are a little bit more raw. They come from a little bit more of a grassroots development when it comes to their football skills. They have a much better work ethic, whereas a player from Texas, for example, you know, if you've seen Texas high school football, the facilities they have, you know, some of them look like small colleges, that many times they've maxed out their talent by the time they're 18 or 19 years old, whereas you get a Florida kid, 17, 18, you might just be scratching the surface of how good he can be once he gets into a weight program, once he gets consistent coaching, once he gets an opportunity to understand conditioning, technique, technical skills, things like that.
And we don't have that entitlement. That comes from a lot of places, because we had to compete for everything. Yeah. Like, from the time you're in Little League, you're competing. I mean, to get on the field, like, we don't get participation trophies, you know, in Florida. Like, you win, you lose. Like, that matters to us from, like, very young age. And I think the more guys you can get in that building that have that, you know, as a part of their fabric and fiber, I think the better.
And, I mean, it's not necessarily just Florida. I mean, Quan Alexander, I remember him from high school. He's from Louisiana.
Well, there's some outliers. It's a couple guys from every state.
Yeah, but, I mean, he's from, like, you know, a little parish in Louisiana where dogs come from, you know, where, I mean, you're working for everything you eat. So there's no doubt that he was going to come into the league and be a tough kid. And, you know, even though he's not perfect, he's going to compete, you know. You want guys, Florida guys, naturally competitors, you know, and even to get outside of Florida, get to Louisiana, get to Mississippi, you want kids that come from a competitive environment to where they really have to grind, where they have to really, you know, take food off of somebody else's plate, that sort of mentality.
There's an edge to them. I think you can make a couple examples about our most recent draft. You know, you go in those second picks, Donovan Smith, unbelievably talented.
Yep.
But he don't really play with that edge.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. Gerald McCoy, unbelievably talented.
No,
but he don't really play with that edge. You know, it's just it's a Florida thing. Unless you're from Florida and played here, you probably wouldn't understand it.
Well, and now, as someone who coaches, I like to think that can be instilled to a certain degree. You can't do it all the way. You can't take someone once they're a grown-ass man and turn them into someone who's done that for 10 years coming up. But you've got to have, whether it be on the coaching staff or whether it's the other players on the team, you've got to create that environment whereby that's what you expect, that's what you demand, because you perform the way the rest of your squad performs. If you're going to go out there, and I'm not saying that our guys play lackadaisically or whatever, because I think Gerald McCoy puts it out, no doubt about it.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, like when I coach offensive linemen, like when you finish, if you're tackling, you finish the guy coming around edge, you finish him, you put him through the ground. It's the one time you get a chance to really hurt someone. Do that then, right? And that's when I think about what you're saying, that's what I see, right? You get a chance to put some pain on someone. This game is about hitting people. Let's not make any bones about it. And I think that fans, they may not articulate it that way, but when they watch the game, we don't want something dirty, right? We want it hard all the time. And listen, I know they've changed the game a lot, and I think everyone on the panel is probably not excited about some of the changes. Some of it has to happen, otherwise we're not going to have this game anymore. But at the same time, It's got to be a game where our defense, like back in the day, they can't do what Lynch did, but damn it, if you're going to release someone on a quick slant, someone better get hit. You can't let them free release down there and just run around and then lay down. By the way, I want to change topics real quick. I want to get everyone's opinion right now. We'll start at Corey. I don't want to jump on Mike Evans because I've been on Mike Evans since training camp, and I know he's a talented cat, and that's great. But the double taps on the catches, the drops, and the laying down like a Rams receiver from 1999 is starting to piss me off. If you're that big, you better play big. I see Julio Jones and Dez Bryant running through people. This cat gets it and lays down in front of a 6'1 cornerback, and that pisses me off. Corey, am I seeing something, or is this real?
No, you're not seeing anything. I've noticed a change in his work ethic. I think, you know, he had a lot of success last year. Maybe he expected things to come a little easier than they've come this year, and he hasn't responded well to more physical play. Guys are bodying up on him a lot more this year than they were last year, and he hasn't responded well to it. And the more he fails to respond to it, the tougher they're going to be on him.
Mike Evans wore a Johnny Manziel Browns jersey to the Texas A&M game Saturday.
And everyone's all pissed off about that.
I'm just saying,
I don't
like,
care if he wears a green thong like Scott, like Spike on the mic, who's here in the crowd right now.
Shout out to Spike on
but
the
mic. But he damn well better run over some small people.
And let me expound on why that matters to me. Champions don't do that kind of stuff. And so no matter how talented guys are, they never won anything at A&M. Like, it was cool just being well-known and being decent as an individual. Like, you didn't really see any hurt and pain in them. They never won or made it to an SEC championship. So you have to be careful sometimes with some of these guys about how much being a champion actually matters. And so to guys that matters, like when we see that kind of stuff, we know he got some growing to do, because that's not the most important thing to him. Like, I would have never in a million years did that.
I asked Lovey about Mike Evans specifically today in Lovey's press conference if teams are playing him differently. And Lovey pretty much cut me off and said no.
They're not.
He said there's not a whole lot. He said truthfully, I mean, yeah, you can roll a safety over and this and that, but ultimately, most opportunities, if you're playing on the outside, is going to be one-on-one, and you've got to beat your man.
And I don't want to hammer Mike, because Mike's talented, and it's not all his fault. Some of it's been Jameis, you know, and his ball location not being great. But the part that I think concerns me the most is I don't know how much it matters.
Like
the only thing people can criticize Keyshawn, but Keyshawn cared. Like, Keyshawn... It mattered to him. Like, he wanted to win a champion. He wanted to be a champion.
Yeah,
if you poll these guys on our current team, and I'm just speaking the truth, and I know I'll probably take some backlash, but if you poll these guys on the current team and they didn't know what the poll like was about, and you put be a champion, where would that be on their priority list?
It better be one.
I doubt it. I doubt with a lot of them if it would be.
Because everything else follows from that. You get paid if you're a champion. Right? All the other stuff follows from that.
But you have to have won something or been somewhere where you didn't win and it mattered to really feel like that.
But the core outside of Jameis, because we brought him in, and that's one of the first.
Jameis cares.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But that's one of the guys who came from a winning football program. But these leaders that we have on the football team, whether it be Gerald McCoy, Levante David, they haven't won while I've been in Tampa. So I don't know if that's part of the attitude they have. They brought in guys like Clinton McDonald, who came over from Seattle. Tony McDaniel came over. They've tried to bring in these guys. But I don't know if it's not resonating or what it is, but that's one of the big critiques that we have, is that these guys who are supposedly our leaders on this football team have not won while they've been in Tampa. And when you go and you get guys like Quan Alexander, who had success in LSU, and Jameis, who had success in Florida State, and they won in college, and now they're rookies, but they're the vocal. They want to step up and be the vocal leaders, but again, they're rookies, and you got to look to the guy ahead of you and say, you've been in this league for how long, but they haven't won football games.
And you know, Sean may call me out on this, but my opinion, and when I've seen it on the sidelines, is if the room is quiet, I don't care how long you've been in the league, you need a voice. So I don't care if the guy who's been there 6 years, who should be the leader, isn't leading, get out of the way and let someone else lead. And hey, if you want to call him out, call him out. But he's stepping up and doing that. And Rondé did it his own way. And I was never in a locker room with Rondé, but as I understand it, and Sean may have some input on this, he did it in a different way. Everyone's got a different style. Some people like the braggadocious, the loud. Some people like the quiet, lead by example. There's a bunch of different styles you can have, and you kind of need – it's like a good recipe. You can't have all one great ingredient and just win. You got to have all of the ingredients. I mean, it takes a trinity, and you got to create a roux, right? You got to have all this stuff together. But at the same time, you got to have at least one ingredient. Damn, we got to have someone willing to step up and say these things and to do that. And I used to hate it when you guys played the Rams, man. You know why I hate the Rams. I hate the Rams for a lot of reasons. And you hate them more than me, I'm sure.
Say it again.
Yeah, I know. But Torrey Holt and Isaac Bruce, and they're talented guys. They deserve all of the credit they get. But they might as well have been playing flag football, because I don't know a single one of them got yak at near contact. And I hated that. That's not how I see football. And when I see Mike Evans – do that, it drives me nuts. And I see other guys, I see Lewis Murphy out there running around, and when we need him, he does what he's supposed to do. I don't know why he's not
a Florida boy.
He's a Florida boy. Yeah, exactly. And you see how I brought it full circle there.
And he came from...
Wait a second.
No, but for real, he came from a program in Florida where they won championships, where winning matters. And when winning matters, your whole approach to the game is different. Like your preparation mark, your attention to detail. Like in wide receivers, the ones that prepare, you can tell. The ones that understand, okay, this cornerback is good at defending this kind of route. He's not so good at defending this one. So I understand when I get this one, I'm probably going to get the ball. I know on 3rd and 4 to 6, they like to play press too, so I got to get this outside release. You know, it's the little things that go into it. When I'm talking about having the mindset of a champion, it's not so much, you know, something that you can visually see. It's something that either is in you or it's not.
Well, I don't know how many of you guys watched the Carolina-Seattle game on Sunday.
Yep.
But I was damn jealous of that football game because this was two teams that were trying to kill each other. It was a playoff atmosphere in week 6. And I don't remember the last time I saw a game with that type of intensity at Raymond James Stadium.
Are you still in my tweet?
No, I don't think so. Scott and I talked about it after the game, my boss Scott. And, you know, we both watched that game and we were like, this is football, man. Both of these teams weren't backing down for anything, and it came down to the last minute. These were two great teams going toe to toe, slugging it out, a great heavyweight match, and you know, Carolina ends up winning it. But I don't see that mentality if you've never, as Sean makes a great point, if you've never won, both these teams have been successful the last few years. If you've never won, I mean, Cam's got a national title when he was with Auburn. I mean, so he knows what it's about in these type of games. And I don't know how you make that happen. Maybe it happens if they start winning. And I'll tell you another thing. Until they get that second win in a row, I don't know that they believe it. I mean, you've got to walk out on the field. I don't think Seattle or Carolina, neither one of those teams walked out on the field feeling there was any chance they were going to lose. And I don't know anybody, many players on this Buccaneer team that walk out on Sundays thinking we're not going to lose.
What's interesting, Mark, is I went on Yahoo before the season and picked Seattle not to make the playoffs.
Ooh, I hope you bet that.
I didn't bet it.
You should have.
I don't know if you could bet it. Could you bet them not to make the playoffs?
You can bet anything.
I thought the future was all like Super Bowl or something.
No, you can bet anything.
I picked Seattle not to make the playoffs, and the reason I did it is because of the first offseason where football wasn't the focal point.
Yep.
You know, every offseason with Seattle, it's always been about football. You know, all of a sudden, it's about Cam Chancellor not showing up. It's about Russell Wilson dating Sierra. It's about, Richard Sherman trying to be a celebrity. Marshawn Lynch filming a movie. You know, and when you start seeing that kind of stuff going on, success doesn't follow that. Because it's a hard game, and unlike college, the talent differential from week to week doesn't exist.
And you know, we talk about that all the time. And I was talking to a buddy of mine, Leadership South, in the chat room, because he's one of these on Chip Kelly's nuts guys. And I got no problem with Chip Kelly. I understand what he did in the college ranks was great, and Philadelphia had a great win the other night. But one of the things I think his offense is predicated on is talent differential. And the NFL, and people say that I'm crazy about this, but Sean, I think you just said the same thing. From best to worst.
From a talent standpoint, it's not that big of a margin. Think about this. How talented do you think Tampa is? Like the Buccaneers. We have Devontae David, Gerald McCoy, Vincent Jackson. We have talented players. We just had the number one pick in the draft, which means that we had the worst record out of all 32 teams. So basically saying we're the worst of the whole lot. And yet, look how much talent we have. Like, that's the one thing you find out when you go from college to the pros. That's why I was like, Jacksonville wasn't going to be a walkover. Jacksonville has good players. They don't have a good team that knows how to win, but they have a lot of individual talent. Where in college, if you're a talented college team, you might play 2 games a year where your opponent has as much talent. And you're going to win, out of those other 9 games, you probably win 7 of them just based on having more talent. You know, Ohio State's a perfect example. Hadn't played good football at any point this year, but they've been so much more talented than everybody that they've played, they found a way to win. Now, it'll be interesting what happens, a lot like Florida State last year when they ran into Oregon, what happens when Ohio State plays a team that's as talented as them.
Well, and, you know, we talked about if you take high school. In high school, it takes one player.
Yeah.
You have one player, it's a different.
You got a chance.
At college, 4-ish, right? Sprinkle them around. In the NFL, it doesn't matter. You're going to have good talent, and that's when coaching, cohesion, chemistry, these things actually matter. Now, back to Mark's point about whether the Bucs step on the field and think they win, there's this story, I don't know if it's really true, Sapp tells it all the time, about when him and Brooks got together and said, listen, we're done with this shit, right? We're done losing, we're going to get this.
You can cuss on this?
I'm not supposed to, but I'm drinking, so it's
there, fine. There goes me putting it up on pewterreport.com. Thanks.
You can edit it, except for I'll have to edit it for you.
Okay.
At any rate, that inflection point when the team decides, because, you know, we can say all day long that the coach can dictate this and mandate this, but that's not, these are grown men. At some point, those guys in the locker room look at each other and go, and I don't care who they look at, whether it's Jameis or whether it's Gerald or whether it's, I don't care who. We're done.
But who are those players? And that's what let, we're talking let, about. Let, who let, are those let, players let, say, on this roster
let,
that's
let me say this big picture, Mark. Association breeds assimilation. Whatever you hang around, you take on the characteristics absolutely. Of your environment. So when I say we need more Florida boys, we need more guys that care about being champions, the more guys you can put in that locker room that come from programs where championships matter. The more guys you can put in that locker room that come from a place that competes, that cares nothing about anything but winning.
Right.
Okay, now that starts to permeate to some of those other guys, like a Mike Evans or, you know, not to call him out,
right.
you know, but just everybody knows who he is, a Donovan Smith, who maybe came from areas and programs where being talented was enough. Like, there wasn't really any bad result when you lost. Like, I come from a group, when you lose, people get fired.
Yes.
Like, still one of the things that hurts me to this day is that we didn't perform well enough so that Tony could get his Super Bowl here. You know, that's still something I live with. And that bothers me to this day. And because winning matters. Championships matter.
And to your point, to Derek's point, you almost want guys that hate to lose more than they love to win. Hey, that was like when I was watching that Seattle-Carolina game. I think Cam just got tired of losing to Seattle. He was 0-4, 0-5 against him. And that second half, he said, I'm sick of losing this damn team. I'm tired of it. And we're going to figure out a way to win this. And I think that's something Jameis has the ability to develop that sort of mentality because he has not lost anywhere he's been. He's won three titles in high school. He won a national title and a Heisman at Florida State. He's not used to losing. And I think right now, you know, he's trying to play that line. There's a lot of, you know, there's so much criticism about him coming into the league that I think he's trying to be everybody's friend. But at some point, I think, you know, the losing is going to get to him and say, I'm sick of this. I'm tired of it.
Corey, I think you're absolutely right. And part of that, he's been throttled to a degree by the organization and some of the leaders on the team. We've heard Gerald say, just be a rookie, just enjoy your rookie year. At some point, though, Jameis does have to establish himself as that leader. And I did ask Jameis that a couple weeks ago, at what point do you make that transaction? And he said the typical thing he's been coached up to say, hey, I'm just the quarterback on this team, this and that. But you know deep down inside it's driving him absolutely crazy. But again, how do you tell Vincent Jackson he ran a wrong route when you threw four picks?
Yeah, you're telling me he ran a wrong route because the four picks don't have nothing to do with it.
Well, here's a problem. And every NFL team deals with this. Where's the middle ground between letting a rookie quarterback fail and you guys still having a chance to win games?
Yeah.
You know, it's easy to say let Jameis go out there and, okay, we don't care how many picks he throws this year. But then if that's going to be the case, then as the media – we can't talk about, okay, Lovey going to get fired if they don't beat Jacksonville, you know, because they've lost three games.
Totally.
And that's the middle ground that these organizations are always trying to find. We don't want to tell the young quarterback, if you don't turn it over, we win. Because he doesn't grow like that. He doesn't get better.
But that's what he's been told. That's what he's being told because he said it again today. What did you learn the most from this offseason? I can't turn the ball over. I mean, the off week, the bye week. He said, I can't turn the ball over.
And it'll be interesting moving forward, you know, because
you can't handcuff the kid.
It's always a difficult dance you're trying to dance, a difficult song you're trying to dance to. You know, because when he was turning it over, he was throwing it 35 times a game.
Exactly.
They were like, okay, hey, just here's the whole playbook. Go out and run it. Then what happens? Everybody in the media in Tampa, hey, man, Lovey going to get fired. Lovey's out of here. This ain't right. They not doing it. Hey. So you see what I'm saying? It's kind of like, what's the correct response?
You know, admittedly, as fringe media, we don't care about that. And I know
what
that
is
you,
fringe media? Describe this to me.
So bloggers, guys like me and Fish over there, like we're not real media. We're not credentialed. We don't do the magical things you guys do. And I have a lot of respect for you guys do this for real. Like this puts food on your table. And you got to do different things than we do. You're in one buck place. You have to do those things. Right? At the end of the day, you guys have to write stories. You guys have to talk about these storylines. The fans demand it. It's not even necessarily you guys putting it out there. The fans demand it. They want to talk about Lovie Smith on the hot seat. By God, they pay their money to buy their tickets, and 96% of the people saying that don't actually buy tickets. And they want to see a win, and we'll get a win by adding another coach. Look, insert example here that happened once in the last 2 years, right? But the reality of the situation is, like Sean says, you know, you don't lose what you don't put in the middle in poker, but you don't win much either. If you got a quarterback in there, you need him to grow. Now, the Aaron Rodgers of the world are a rarity. They get to sit behind a Brett Favre and learn and then come in there and do amazing
things.
It's
not even a rarity. It's an exception to the rule. It just doesn't happen anymore.
But also understand, and I always tell people this, the reason that Aaron Rodgers got to sack because Green Bay was one of the last selections in the first round. Green Bay was really good.
Yeah.
We drafted Jameis Winston first because we were really bad.
And Green Bay sat him for how many years, too?
Because they could. They had a quarterback in
play. They had a decent guy from Mississippi.
You know who this is why New England is so good. New England's had Tom Brady, right? They drafted Ryan Mallett in the third round and Jimmy Garoppolo in the second. Like, they're always preparing for
always stocking the shelf.
The guy isn't there anymore. And that's why they're so good. But most teams won't do that.
And Bucks fans talk about, well, why can't we be more like the Patriots or the Packers? And they used to use the Steelers until the Steelers sort of fell out of favor, right? These guys that are sort of perennial contenders and this sort of thing. Perennial contenders just get you happy for about 3 years, and then it gets Tony Dungy fired because contenders no longer good enough because now Super Bowl is the bar that you've got to get to. So we have to maintain a time window, and I was busting Fish up earlier a little about that, because stats typically end up in a narrow time window. Football is not a narrow time window game. It's a longer time window game, especially the skill positions, right? You can't judge a quarterback by 1 year. You can't. You have to judge a body of work, and you have to be willing to deal with that. When we drafted Jameis Winston, like it or not, Lovie Smith needs to be here for a couple years. We got to have Dirk Cutter here for a couple years. You got to give this kid a chance to learn and shut up about it.
That's
right?
going to be if there were to be a coaching change, that's going to set him back a whole year in a sense. I mean,
easily
you're starting over. You know what I mean? And continuity in a staff. You're absolutely right with Bill Belichick. As long as he's been there in New England, you know, there's a continuity. And I would say that overall, 1 through 53, the Patriots haven't necessarily been the most talented
not at all.
Football
not
team in the league over this year. But they have a structure. They have an organization. They have a plan. And they do things what they call the Patriot way, and it works.
Absolutely.
Listen, Ocho Cinco went up there. And when he went up there, a buddy of mine told me, listen, he's not going to work there. Because Chad doesn't know the offense. He didn't know offense in Cincinnati. It was Chad's offense there. He didn't work there. It's not because Chad's not talented. Chad's a talented cat. You don't play Belichick's game, you don't play. I don't care who you are. You could be the savior. You're not going to be up there and play if you don't know what you're doing, right?
Edelman's a tenth of the talent of Chad Johnson. And when Randy
but all day, every
there.
Day.
Absolutely.
What happened to Chad? Chad had fell into what a lot of guys fall into. It was more important to him to be a celebrity than it was to be a champion.
Yeah.
He'll play you in FIFA, though.
Yeah.
Let's train our guns a
little
bit.
I heard he's pretty good, too.
I heard he is, too. I don't want to play him.
I'm terrible at video games. I don't even know how to turn
it's
on.
It's those big, meaty hands you got.
You lie.
I don't even know how to turn
you
a video
lie.
Game. I don't.
You lie.
I have not.
Don't
honest,
lie.
You were good. Honestly, you were good at back in the
listen,
day.
Listen.
Tiger Woods Golf? Really?
You
lie? You
guys play Pokemon together?
I will say this. The last time I was a video game guy was when Tiger Woods Golf in his second year.
That was before he got beat with a 7-iron, right?
I haven't played Madden since, like, 04.
Yeah, I haven't played Madden since, like, Sega Genesis.
Yeah, I'm terrible at video games.
I'm horrible at Madden.
I hate to lose, so I'm not any good, so I don't even play.
Yeah, you don't want
to
get worked by some 13-year-old online, you know?
Losing and me, like, just doesn't go together. So I just, if I'm not good at it, I don't play.
Now, speaking of losing, it's not even true, because I hope we're going to win against Washington. But let's turn our guns towards the Washington Redskins coming
Kirk
up.
Kirk Cousins is horrible, just so you know. As a Jets fan who got a chance to see him last week, Kirk Cousins is awful.
Well, I've watched the Redskins for the last couple of weeks, and honestly, the worst thing that could happen to the Buccaneers this week is if Kirk Cousins struggles early and they put in Colt McCoy, because he can actually read defenses.
Beware yes. Colt McCoy.
+3 takeaways right now before the game even started, because Kirk Cousins is going to play.
Kirk's biggest issue is his ball location. And it's always been that. He's not a very accurate thrower of the football. And
that seems important for a quarterback, Sean. I'm not an expert here.
I know. And that really always becomes his Achilles heel. You know, that and decision-making. And why Jay, who I know very well.
You do know Jay. What is up?
Would hitch his wagon to this. I have no idea. Man, he's good-looking. So, I mean, hey. I don't know what's going on. It's really weird. And the thing that I think people overlook, because they hated RG3 so much. And sometimes when you hate somebody, you go to the other option, even though you know the other option isn't a really good option. You know, like sometimes you got an ex that you know is just a terrible, 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 terrible option. And you go somewhere else and that's a terrible option too, just so you don't have to be with the ex. But Kirk had played a lot of football before Jay announced him the starter this year. Him and RG3 came in this league the same year. Like, remember that they drafted him in that same draft. He's played a lot. He played for Shanahan when he was there. He played for last year when he came in and played, when RG3 got hurt. Yeah. He's had two opportunities before this year to prove he was the guy.
And John Gruden said that he was one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever walk the earth or something to that effect, if I recall.
Please don't mention
it. Come on, you know that I had to bring that up.
Listen, John's the only quarterback guru who's never developed a quarterback in life.
Joe Theismann, he compared Kirk Cousins to LeBron.
I'm for real. He's the only guru walking around that's never developed a quarterback in life. And I challenge anybody to tell me.
He would argue he developed Jay in the Arena League.
Hey, Bruce Gradkowski's made a living.
The Polish Pistol is still getting paid.
Still getting paid. I don't know how, but he is.
He got rid of Bruce Gradkowski.
Yeah, but he's still getting paid, though.
He didn't think it. Well, I mean, that was obviously he got rid of him for who? Like, he's the only guy who's never developed a quarterback ever. It's unbelievable. Yeah, he has, what is it, Gruden's QB camp.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you, the TV's, America's amazing. I mean, this experiment that is America, this thing is amazing. It's unbelievable. They can make people rich on a show that says housewives of a certain city, and none of them are married.
Yeah. And I don't want none of you women laughing because y'all all watch it. So
not
shut
one
up.
Of them married. It's, America is the most unbelievable experiment in modern mankind.
And I have a podcast. Who knows? And I don't get paid for it. So I need one of those housewives to come on the show. So if you're listening, go ahead and come on the show. You can be on here with Sean and Mark and Corey down there, who's still watching his Mets win 6-0.
Now, hey, but let me stop you right here. I'll tell you this, because our readers on Pewter Report's message boards, they like to troll other teams' message boards and find out what they're saying. There's a podcast right now somewhere in Alexandria, Virginia, or Washington, D.C., saying the exact same thing about the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, how bad of a football team they are, how Jameis Winston is good for 3 interceptions before he gets off of the bus. I mean, the exact same thing is being said. Lovey said it. He said it yesterday. He goes, everybody up in D.C. saying this is a must-win, the end of the world, if we lose to the Buccaneers.
One of the advantages of working with Yahoo and doing NFL and college football for them. By the way, let me plug something. Sunday morning, if you guys want to watch the Buffalo versus Jacksonville game and you don't want to hear the CBS broadcast, you can mute the TV. I am doing the live stream call of the game on Yahoo on Sunday morning. So if you want to watch it on CBS and then have the audio come from Yahoo, that will be yours truly. I've been told that they want a non-traditional broadcast, so you know.
Well, they got the right guy.
This is going to
holla
be
at your
awesome.
Boy. Listen, if that takes off, we're going to need to talk on the side real quick.
This is going to be awesome. So, but again, like my initial point for this was, I get to do radio shows in all the cities. So during the week, like Yahoo has.
He's
going to
say none
that,
better than this too. Why does he say that?
But it's amazing. Yeah, none better than what the buck. What's up, bro? Appreciate you having me on too. I appreciate it. You know, the one thing I say about Derek is Derek is as passionate of a Buck fan as anybody that I know. And if you haven't been to his tailgate, it's pretty awesome. I played cornhole a couple years ago for the first time in my life, and I'm not very good at it.
Did they take you to my golf cart? Because they won't bring me a. They want me to come, but they don't want me.
He lied to me. He said it's close.
Yeah, it is close.
I Google aerial mapped it one time.
He lied to me.
It's in Western Plant City. If you tell me,
I haven't been back since.
Yeah. That's because you're afraid to walk. You're just like Mark Cook.
Yeah, I don't walk a lot. You see me lately? I mean, me and walking don't really get together.
You're losing weight, though. You're good.
But I was on radio in Washington because of the Yahoo responsibilities. And if you could understand how excited they were about Kirk Cousins being their quarterback coming into this year. It's the most unbelievable thing. I'm just telling you, America is a great place.
Do you remember how many Buccaneer fans a couple years ago when RG3 was playing well wanted to give up a number one draft pick to bring Kirk Cousins here when Josh was starting to have his struggles? That was a big deal.
And I'll tell you this, RG3 can still be a successful quarterback. But this is the problem in the National Football League. The system that allows RG3 and these zone read quarterbacks to be successful exposes the quarterback to injury. Yet the way the salary structure is currently
can't
situated,
afford to get him injured.
The quarterback makes so much money right. that you can't risk it. You know, it's one of Philly's biggest issues with their running game is that Sam Bradford is not a threat to run the football. So you don't have to have contain on those zone replays of DeMarco and Ryan Matthews. Those ends can crash down. You don't have to worry about getting up the field because
right.
he's not a running threat.
If only Chip knew that. Oh, wait, he does know that, but he still plays Sam Bradford.
I'm telling you, I'm going to say this now. Philly's close to getting hot on offense.
I'm just telling you, Philly is
close to getting really hot on offense. They're figuring out what DeMarco does well, what Ryan Matthews does well. And once Bradford stops turning the ball over in the red zone, you guys are going to be surprised. If you look at his picks the last three games, Five of them have been in the red zone. Three of those five have been actually intercepted in the end zone.
Until they bring John Runyon back, Philly ain't nothing.
John Runyon.
Recognize Runyon. Now, to Mark's point and to Sean's point, and Fish, I want to get you in here too. The Redskins game, I've got a buddy up there who's hosting us for the Redskins game, is a member of PFUFA, and they are. They're saying all the same stuff, right? The Bucks, they're struggling. Our fans ourselves, we're like, oh, my God. Like I said, we're so bipolar. It's 1 week, we're going to the Super Bowl. Next week, everyone should be fired. We should burn down one Buck place and build a new building. And yet, here we sit, going to Washington with a chance to win a winnable game in Washington and then face the Falcons. What, you don't think is winnable, Spike? Because every game is winnable. If I get past that, it's winnable because they suck too.
Spike's a pessimist.
Spike's a pessimist, but yeah, he doesn't understand sports. I love him. He's very pretty, but the green thong pessimists. Doesn't give him any intellectual capability in football. He's beautiful, and he has an award-winning podcast, by the way.
What makes the Bucks better than the Redskins?
The Redskins last week?
Have you watched them play?
Kirk Cousins.
No, I have an answer.
Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins.
I think. Let me.
They killed him last year at Washington.
Washington's banged up.
Yeah, 27-7.
Jordan Reed probably is not going to play if he does. He's not healthy.
Deshaun Jackson's not playing.
Matt Jones didn't play last week.
And I think Jay got a lot of criticism, but he made a valid point. Washington's far from healthy. When Washington's all the way healthy and Deshaun's 100%, Jordan Reed's 100%, Pierre Garçon, Ryan Grant, Crowder, the kid from Duke. You know, Matt Jones, Alfred Morris, all those guys are all the way healthy. You know, they have really good players.
They do.
So, and it comes back to what I said earlier. They're talented. Now, they're not – don't get it twisted now. I mean, Washington's not a non-talented team. Kirk Cousins just is
– there are no Jacksonville Jaguars.
Kirk Cousins is the modern-day Vinny Testaverde. I think he's colorblind. Like, he throws to the other team late in the game, and it's just tough to win like that.
You ain't seen Vinny lately. You say that too loud, he'll whip that ass.
But Vinny's still colorblind.
He's still colorblind.
He can't be mad at me for telling the truth.
No, he ain't come mad.
Yeah, there's no cure for
that. No, but to the point, though, you look at what's happening here in Tampa, and I am definitely obviously biased. Spike, you know that. And for those of you who know who we're talking about, here in the crowd, we got a nice little crowd here at Wing House at 8001 Hillsborough Avenue. Thanks to them for having us out here. Spike on the Mic, award-winning podcast, the Spike on the Mic show. Congratulations.
He gave himself that award.
Well, I don't care who gives the award.
I still haven't found a group that gives that award every year.
I don't even care. He's got the award. But when you look at what's happening here, and much like my moniker, listen, I'm a big fan. We got Jameis Winston. I love the Vincent Jackson should play football well. I love that Mike Evans should play football well. But I got a team that somehow is able to run the ball with Doug Martin and Sims against one of the best run defenses in the league. You can front all you want, but they're a good run defense, and they had 8 and 9 in the box all day long.
And I don't usually pick the Bucks to win big, but I've gone into this game because I've watched the last couple Redskins
games.
Wait,
you watched the games?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. Did you watch the games, Mike?
Well, I'm fringe.
Ah.
When you give up 153 yards on the road to Devontae Freeman, you give up 146 on the yards on the road to Chris Ivory. Look, the Washington Redskins defense at this point cannot stop the run. And what's the Bucs defense, or I'm sorry, what's the Bucs offense strength at this point is running the football. And we've mentioned Kirk Cousins. We know that they have they're beat up in the secondary as well. They were down their top two corners. Deshaun Goldson is Deshaun Goldson. I know people like to say a lot of nice things about him, but what I've seen on tape on him is not good. He's still taking the wrong angles. He's still not making tackles. So this is not only a winnable game, but in my opinion, it's a game that the Bucks should win and win big. And it starts, in my opinion, with Doug Martin and Charles Sims running the football.
I definitely don't agree with win big.
I don't agree with win big, but I will say.
I think it's a 50-50 game. First of all, it's a road game. And it's a road game at a place where they really support the Redskins no matter what. Like, they're going to be there. It's going to be loud.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's also a weather game. It's the first time that Tampa's going to go on the road, and it's going to be cold.
It's going to be the crack of 56.
You can act like it doesn't matter, but when we played, the first thing we looked at when we got our schedule, where do we have to go in November and December?
Green Bay.
That was the first thing we looked at. And when you look at Washington, 2 weeks ago against Atlanta, they really have the Falcons beat on the road.
They did.
Now, they blow it in the fourth quarter and turn the ball over, and they lose. Last week against the Jets, they played the Jets really play for play for the majority of that game.
For the first half.
Third quarter discrepancy in points. And Washington collapses in the second half.
They're not terrible. Like, they're not Detroit.
But they have Kirk Cousins, which kind of makes them as bad.
And Spike on the mic just wrote on the notepad, thank you, which team has their back against the wall? And now, Fish, you talked about that a little bit.
That's true, because Washington at this point is 2-4, and they're going into the bye week right now. So this, if there's a must-win game for Washington right now, it is this week.
For who? This is their first Jacksonville game.
But for who? Like, who on the Washington, like, that's a player?
No, I understand.
Like, for their career personally, is this a must-win?
Well, for Jay Gruden, it's a must-win game for him, because of the fact that
they
lose.
Don't care about that.
If they lose to Tampa, they go 2-5, they go into the bye week. The next week, they're up in New England. They got to go on the road against the Patriots. So that's 2-6 right there. That's turmoil, in my opinion, right now for Washington. So from a must-win game between Tampa Bay and Washington, I understand it's more important for Washington to win this football game than it is for Tampa Bay.
I think our greatest advantage is
this team is dangerous.
I think our greatest
all of them are.
I think all of them are dangerous.
I think our greatest advantage is Washington's comfortable with losing. I feel like their players are comfortable with losing.
I agree.
They won't say that, but nobody's getting torn up because they're losing in Washington.
My biggest
fear. You look at that roster. It's just they don't have that makeup right now from a personnel standpoint.
And to your point, I mean that loss at Atlanta was heartbreaking. They led in the fourth quarter, losing a pick six in overtime. They came out, you know, hot, good first half against the Jets, and they laid down. I mean, they were awful in the third quarter.
They're getting turnovers early in the first half, but their offense is not turning that into points. They're settling for field goals, and that's been the problem with Washington this year is while their offense or their defense in the first half is getting takeaways, they're not getting points out of that. They're one of the worst points per game, I think 19.5 this year for Washington. So I think it's a very winnable game.
And that all goes back to Kirk Cousins.
It's true.
And Corey Long is going to fight Kirk Cousins.
It's not like it's not like Matt Ryan didn't have receivers running wide open. He did. He just had a horrible game. It's not like the Washington defense made him have a horrible game. He just was off, but they ended up winning that game anyway.
Now, my biggest fear is the fact that we beat him soundly last year. That's locker room stuff, and I don't know if that matters, Sean.
Not with the guy on the right-hand side who played football.
But you go up there, Spike brings up the point, who's got their back against the wall? This is a team in Tampa, I think, that all of a sudden, and Mark said it really well early, we haven't won two in a row, right? So if you're trying to get these guys going, you got to win, right? And if you ever played basketball, if you're cold outside, you go, you make a layup. And you want to prove there's a basket there, and you can actually put a ball through it, right? We got to win. Okay, wins work. They happen. It's a real thing. Now we got to get two. Right, so let's go up there, and I'm a huge fan of simplifying, like I said. Doug Martin's running the ball well. The screen game, we all of a sudden know how to run a screen. I don't know when that happened, when the Rosetta Stone showed up, but we can all of a sudden run a screen play successfully, and Charles Sims makes good things happen. Don't get cute with this. Now, Sean, 2 years ago, I think it was, you made a comment in boot action when you roll a quarterback out, two-level reads, simplify reads for a young quarterback, right? Yeah, you have the field. I get that. And a lot of coaches say, well, I don't like boot option because it halves the field. That's okay. It's a safe play. You can go two or even three levels deep. Jameis can make the read. You shorten the pass because I'm running towards that play just like they did on the conversion, right? We can do those. Cutter is smart. There is a game plan here that allows him to maximize Jameis' talent, leverage the running game, which is a legitimate threat, and actually let our defense catch their breath and make a difference. And I think that's what we're starting to see. Now, will we see it? Is it here yet? I'm not saying Super Bowl. What I'm saying is I think we're going in the right direction.
I guess my main concern is you got a team coming off a win, their first home win in, what, about 18 months, and the bye week. And I'm wondering how they dealt with this time off. They were obviously feeling good after a victory. How do you deal with this bye week? You've had 14 days in between games. Again, you're facing a team that I think mentally they feel like they can beat, that isn't that tough. And you worry about just a team coming out flat. So to me, this is a big week because it just tells me a lot about the mentality of this team and how they're going to deal with this situation. This is very unique to them. They're coming off of a win and a bye week, so they've had a lot of time to enjoy this.
I wondered, and I haven't asked any players this. Maybe I will tomorrow, but I have a legitimate question. Would you rather have played last weekend coming off that win from a momentum standpoint? How much does that week off, that time off, really kind of kill whatever kind of momentum that you built coming off of that first win? But, you know, Lovey talked about it today. He said he's never coached and thought the bye week came at a wrong time. You know, they had a lot of guys banged up. He thinks they're going to get a lot of these guys back with that extra week, so he was okay with it. But I do wonder if you know, maybe this team plays better if they didn't have a bye week last week. Maybe they, you know, if that Redskins game was last week, I would feel more comfortable there. But again, we'll see what happens. I think Tampa Bay can certainly win. But to me, again, we go back to the mentality thing, the Patriot way, whatever it is. everything starts with next week or the next game. And to build that mentality, you've got to win that second game. Then you've got to put a three-game streak together at some point. This win one game here, and then 7 games later you win a game, or 5 games later, that's not really ever going to build that winning, you know, mentality that football teams or really any sports team need to have.
What's interesting, if we're honest, none of us know.
No, of course not.
I think it's a winnable game, but, I mean, we got so many young guys. This is their first bye. And after, who knows what's going to show up in Washington? To be honest, is there any result that would surprise you?
Did any of us expect Marcus Mariota to walk in here and win 41-14?
No, but Mark, answer that question. For this specific game, is there any result that would surprise you?
No, they could get blown out, they could blow them out, or it could be an overtime game.
It's just a weird game. It's one that's winnable.
A tie. Because
Washington's not very good. But
a tie would be crazy.
A tie would surprise me.
If I had to bet the mortgage, I probably would just hopefully give me another game. I don't trust the Redskins. I don't trust the Bucks. I mean, I think we're getting better. I think we have young players that hopefully are gaining experience. But as far as
the wild card,
I know how we're going to travel to Washington in this environment. It's going to be loud, cold. I don't know.
And you have a rookie quarterback. And you can't underestimate the fact that it's going to be unpredictable.
A lot of these rookies, their first time in Chocolate City. I mean, who knows?
Jameis is going to have hopefully not more games like he had against Carolina, but it wouldn't shock me if he had a couple more of those this year. Not five turnover games.
If you notice, I don't really bring up Jameis because I think he's the least of our worries.
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, the one thing about Jameis is Jameis loves the process. Like, most young quarterbacks that are talented that don't fail, like Colin Kaepernick's a perfect example. Colin Kaepernick loves the physical preparation that goes to playing a quarterback because he's very into how he looks. So he's going to work out. But he hadn't embraced the mental process of being able to get in the huddle, blast, Y bunch right, F counter motion, 72 crisscross, Y swing, X out. Hey, if we get Mike Sam, we're going 98 bunch crunch. And getting to the line of scrimmage, understanding it's 3rd and 4 to 6, they're in the under, so I know they're going to play this coverage based on what they showed me on film. He hadn't gotten there. See, that's stuff you don't have to worry about with Jameis. That's why he's going to be successful, because he loves that part of it. You know,
right.
and not all young quarterbacks have that.
He said it today, again. You know, he would have preferred not to have a bye week. He wanted to play. You know, he was ready to get back in the building.
And what are he doing his bye week?
He went back to
Florida State on the sideline.
And fam.
Because and winning fam. Matters. Like, he comes from a place where everybody is miserable if we lose. Like, that's how I grew up. If we lose, everybody miserable. Like, ain't no going out. Ain't no hello in the hallway. Like, practice is going to be unbelievably difficult. Tony going to have us in pads every day of the week. We're going to hit. Like, that's how I was raised.
And he didn't wear a Devontae Freeman Falcons jersey when he went to the game either.
Oh, Lord have mercy.
Like, if you're a Buck, like, why would you ever put a brown jersey on?
So,
man, I don't care
what he wears.
We boys, but we enemies too now. We're in the same league, and we competing for the same thing. They only give out one Super Bowl trophy a year. I was asked, a young lady in the audience asked me, what do I have against Mike supporting his boy? We're competitors. Like, some of my best friends, I compete. I would never put their jersey on no matter what. Like, it's just not going to happen. Because we're competing for the same thing, and only one of us can win. And that's just how I'm built. That's how I'm raised. That's how every fabric and fiber in my body is. Nothing else supersedes winning. Like that's the ultimate goal. That's the most important aspect. That is the only thing that matters at the end of the day is winning. Because when you finish this game, they don't remember losers.
No.
They don't remember losers. That's just a part of life.
He almost won, Dan Marino.
Like I'm still remembering the Tulane. Why? Because we won.
Undefeated.
We went undefeated. We won every game we played. There's nothing you can ever take away from that. We still remember who's the most memorable Buck team, the one that won the championship.
Not the one in 99 that was a better team.
Yeah, but
they didn't win the Super Bowl, so don't matter.
And we got hoes, but no matter what it was, that team isn't viewed in the same light as the team that won the championship because championships matter. They can never take those from you.
Maybe my son is a young Sean King in the making, just JV high school football.
Sure, we look alike.
Two losses. Well, I mean, it's a possibility.
Could have been.
He's adopted, so he could be daddy.
I've seen him before.
Yeah. But
he's
look,
a kicker,
look,
though.
Look, but the thing is, they lost two of their six games this year.
And I had to force him Friday morning to get on the bus. I mean, he was just mad. He won when we lost. When I say we, when he lost to Plant City, when his team. I didn't mean to say that.
Oh,
that
he slipped up with a personal pronoun.
All right, that's high school though. That's
You're
my
such
son's
a hack.
Team. But he, you know, and this was bad, and I probably should be more disturbed about it. But he wanted the Plant City bus to break down on the way back to Plant City. I mean, he despised the fact that he lost. You know what I mean?
And he should.
I love guys like that.
He should like. I believe sports can teach you a lot of things.
Absolutely.
And that's why I hate this whole conference pride thing in college football.
But,
because when Florida State gets
all
beat,
that.
I want their plane to have difficulty. I was going to say crash.
Well, I don't want anybody.
But well, I got to kill people, Mark.
I wanted Oregon to get a bad case of food poisoning. I wanted them to get a bad case of food poisoning when they beat Florida State. I really did.
I don't know why you're trying to get people killed, Mark.
See, this is interesting because I never wanted anything to happen to our opponents. I wanted them to show up with their best, and I wanted us to show up with our best, and I wanted to beat their best. I didn't want to hear
No. I didn't mean
such
before
such
the game. I mean
he means after.
Lost.
No, he means after. He wants
home.
Them to, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
We're going
to.
After the game, whatever happened.
In the NCAA tournament, who root for ACC guys even though Duke gets knocked out, which is crazy.
I've had this conversation with so many people that you would recognize in the sports media about – why the result matters. See, the media has gotten to this point now where you can just say anything. You can have any kind of opinion. You can talk bad about somebody. You can throw something out there. And what the actual truth and end result is, no one ever goes back and actually does a recap on who said what before. Like, that's the thing I love about sports. Like, you can say whatever you want to me, but when our teams play, that result gonna live forever.
Every day. Yep.
Like, it's still, like, guys, we're still getting the arguments. Like, where your championship at?
It was great last
empty
week.
Empty trophy case.
Guys coming to me all the time about Tulane lose, and I say we went undefeated. What you did?
Yeah.
Hey, look in the locker room last week, that last day before their break, Lewis Murphy and Russell Shepard got into it big time, and it was that was the best open locker room session I've ever been into for 10 minutes.
That's wait, Florida, wait, LSU. Wait, wait, two then SEC guys, right?
Florida LSU,
then,
Mark?
Then Jameis
just checking,
in,
Mark.
Then Jameis jumped in and said, "How many of you guys went undefeated and won a Heisman?" You know, what I mean, so it was great to listen to the guys go back and forth. And then Major Wright piped in.
Murphy's
a little
got two.
So. I would say this.
Major Wright was there. Did he get injured talking?
Murphy did say.
Hey, Major went to Florida.
I'm just saying he needs to not be made of tissue.
Yeah, but they do. Winning
he's
matters.
Like 43. He's kind of old.
I wish we lived in a society where we could open up the locker room and let the fans see, you know, the real locker room. Like, what really goes on.
I wish I could report on that.
The only reason I'm not an advocate for it is because I found out that America wants access, but when they get access,
they don't want truth.
And they don't like what they see.
They don't want truth.
Now they want to change what they find.
Yeah, they don't want truth.
So that's why I hope it never happens. But like, if we lived in a different America, I wish we could open it up and show you what it's like. No, but for real, like, America wants access. They always want to see. They want to get behind the curtain.
Right.
But when they find out what's behind the curtain, if they don't agree with it, okay, now they want to change it.
Door number two. I want a different reality.
Yeah, they don't want the grimy details.
Man, that locker room, I'm telling you guys, that locker room, I can tell you some stories
it's
I never
nasty.
Will. But
you got a mic?
It's not nasty.
It's fringe media. No one hears this. Only six people
listen
to it.
It's not nasty, but it's one of those places where you got to be what you say you are. Like, you in that locker room, whatever you say you are, that's what you got to be. Like, if you're going to be the big bad wolf, okay, people taking bites at the wolf. I mean, we had fights. Like, we won a Super Bowl and we had multiple fights that year. Hey, I can't tell nobody. It just is what it is. Y'all knuckle it up. Something happened. Boom. Somebody wins. Somebody lose.
We move on.
Practice that day.
You move on.
And that's how it should be. And the thing about the locker room is, and this is the one part about it that I love. I don't have to agree with you or what you're doing to be able to play with you.
Right. You know, just do your job.
I think America's gotten so into this niche where if you don't agree with something, that means you hate it.
Right.
That means you can't coexist with it. That means, like, boom, I'm on the other side of it. Like, in that locker room, it's so many different backgrounds, so many different belief systems. I mean, it's when we get on that field, it's like, okay, we about it today.
It's fascinating to me, and I see 1/10 of what you're talking about because we have that 45-minute period. I know what
you
goes on.
You owe me a beer.
I know what goes
on.
Oh,
you can't get away with the subliminal.
No. I'm just saying. No. What I meant is what
he
you
did
were
it again.
Saying.
Didn't
I
he
meant
did
what
it
you
again.
Were saying
yeah,
about
he did it.
It.
Again.
I mentioned what you were saying about it. You know, to be able to see what's inside that locker, it's fascinating. Now, as reporters, though, there's kind of that unwritten rule. those kind of things you don't really report on.
Well, I've never gone in the locker room. When I transitioned to the media, like the one thing I've told ESPN, NBC, I'm currently with Yahoo, I don't do locker rooms. Like, I feel like the media shouldn't be in the locker room. And I know a lot of media disagree with that, but I feel like that should be the sanctuary of the team.
And that's why when, yeah, you know, that'll be my book I write when I need retirement money. You know,
I really feel like that should be off limits.
It's so funny. So I talked to Cheryl, so Spence in the crowd right now. And we go to training camp back when we used to get credentialed until we got cut out this year because they suck. But
true.
We coming off the field, you're
I'll
in training
I'll get
camp.
You, I'll get you back straight.
Listen, man, I didn't want to talk about it. These guys suck.
I'll get you back straight.
So at any rate, these guys come off. These guys are trying to make a team. Right? Even the guys, I mean, you got some guys who know they're going to make the team. But a lot of these guys, they're fighting for rent money. This is a legit thing. If this doesn't work, their dream that they've had since they were seven is over. I'm not trying to talk to these guys. Right, I'm not trying to do it then, because they're going to give me a soundbite at best. They're going to give me a party line at best, because they got a PR guy watching them. That's not what I'm trying to do. And you guys do a great job, Mark and Sean, if you do that. You guys do a great job trying to make that compelling for the fans. But the reality is Will Golston in a contract year is worried about how he performed that day, what he's going to see on film. If his knee is giving out on him, he's got to hit the cold tub or hit the game-ready device to get ready to go back to the next play. I don't need that.
I heard somebody say the practice squad guys that get, or not even practice, the guys who get cut, you know, the 53 to 90, those guys have worked harder at something that most average people
will ever work in their life.
Can't even comprehend how hard their whole life has been to get to this goal.
And that pissed a lot of people off. I remember that tweet, right? And that pissed a lot of people off, and I don't think it was fair. The comment was, these guys who get cut, who you talk trash about,
yep,
worked harder at their craft than you may ever work in your life at, yep, yours. And of course, there are a bunch of lunch pail clowns. They're like, no, you don't understand what real work is, because I bend iron with my bare hands. Hey, listen, man, you don't know what these guys do. They are a different human being. Right, they are. This is a very real thing. And every day, it's not their weight. It's the weight of their family, their wife, their kids, their mom, their dad, their cousins. They weigh that every single day. And right, it is absolutely correct. And I don't give a crap what anyone says, because that's the way it is.
And you know, I tend to be pro player maybe a little bit too much sometimes. I don't really hammer players per se, because I do see the work they put in. While we're sweating up in the stands, me and you.
You're in the press box. You ain't sweating.
No,
shut up.
I'm saying at training camp.
Okay.
We sit together.
That's fair.
And we're perspiring and we're smelling each other.
I sweat here.
All right. So. But what I'm saying is, what we're complaining about, it, these guys are out there wearing pads and they're 10 degrees hotter than we are and they're killing themselves. And in training camp, these guys are not making a penny, right? These free agent guys, they get paid. They get a signing bonus. They don't start getting a paycheck until week one.
No, they get paid in preseason. Everybody gets the same. Everybody gets the same.
He's talking about training camp, though.
Yeah, everybody gets the same amount, though. Yeah, you get like a
you get a stipend.
Yeah, whatever it is.
But I mean, you're not getting your you know, $400,000 every 2 weeks.
Let me say this, Mark. I don't really get into like guys getting cut, guys not. It is what it is. You know what I mean? Like, we grew up competing. Like, they're gonna put 100 of us on a team, and 53 gonna make it. Now, what you can do is every time you get on the field, that's a part of your resume for all the other teams.
Right.
I think the thing that I do sympathize in football is there are only 32 of these jobs. Like, it's not like football has a triple-A system. You know, if you're a baseball player, you don't make it to the bigs. You can play 10 years minor league baseball. If you're a basketball player, you don't make the NBA.
You can go
play in Europe somewhere overseas NBDL. For 10, 12 years. I do sympathize with the fact that when it ends in football, it's really over. Because there's no money in arena football. Right. Nobody's really trying to go there. There's no money in Canada anymore. Like, that's the part that I don't think people understand. It's okay, they got to reset the life button. Because it's not like I can go play and make $200,000 over here, you know, at this job, you know. So that's the part I sympathize. But as far as, like, the actual competition, it just is what it is. Like you know that. And it's a alpha male kind of profession.
And they've done it since they were on a peewee team to be a starter. I mean, if you weren't the best, you didn't play. Same thing in high school and college. It just gets obviously more intense when you get up to this league, because this is, like you say, the end of the road. If I get fired by Scott tonight, hopefully that doesn't happen, you better bet my resume is going to go out to everybody else, and hopefully I'll get a job somewhere.
I think
doesn't happen in the NFL.
I think the thing that Hard Knocks and those kind of shows enlighten is that all the guys that get cut, it's not because they aren't good enough. And I think that's the tough part about this game, is when you deserve to be on the team, but for whatever reason, they make too many guys at your position getting paid.
You've got six years in.
They got three
linebackers
hurt, you know, so they got to keep an extra. Like, those are the situations that you kind of sympathize with, you know, especially when it's coming to the end. You know, because could you imagine being in your profession and being overly qualified and not being able to find a job anywhere? Like every other profession, okay, say it doesn't work in Tampa. You can go to St. Pete. You can go to Clearwater. You can decide to leave Florida, go somewhere else. And whatever you did before on your resume, that's something that is an asset to you going to your next spot. And football is like when it's over, it's over. Like you ain't been doing nothing since college. We're playing football, most of the guys. And it's like you can walk up in Verizon if you want to. Hey, man, I played football the last 6 years. They ain't gonna look at you like, okay.
I know we're subverting.
You want to buy a cell phone? Yeah.
I know we're subverting the content of the show a little bit, but that's what we do. We talk about the stuff that I think resonates.
Well, it's a 10-hour show.
It's a 2-hour show. I know you real professionals aren't used to that. You're used to 3 minutes of content and 7 minutes of commercials.
We're just
you're going to have to breathe a little heavy and actually talk some content, young man.
But, Sean, we're used to getting paid to talk content.
That's true.
We're going to break.
That's true. Yeah, you can get paid to have content.
I actually like this. I'll say this. I wish Pepper was still here so I could tell him the mistakes he made when he took over.
Oh, Pepper.
I want to uppercut him. I miss radio. Like, I do because, like, in what we do, in what I do now, even though your opinion, it reaches more people because it's national, you don't get the time to really expand and really, like, educate, I think, the listener. Like, it's so hard in 45 seconds or 30 seconds sometimes to really get everything that you need as it pertains to a certain opinion, you know, into that piece. You know, so I was excited when you invited me. I was wondering why you hadn't invited me before.
Oh, shut up, man. You're big time. I'm afraid to invite you.
Well, we as podcasts don't tamper ratings either. We can't do that.
Nah, I'm from St. Pete, though, so I always support everything local. I always have. I'm a Lightning fan. I'm a Rays fan.
And he retweets. It's all good love. Sean King definitely does that. But one of the things I want to say before we go back and train our guns back on Washington and kind of bring this back on course is if you haven't sat with one of these guys who's done this since they were seven,
that's a beer,
and dealt with the fact that when they get cut because they've got no P-Squad eligibility left, the younger guys are cheaper. It doesn't matter that they're more talented. They're not 70% more talented. They're 43% more talented. And they get cut, and they've got to find a new life, and they feel like they let down their whole family, right? That's the life these guys deal with. It's very real. And I know people say, well, they make plenty of money to deal with it, and that was the choice they made. That's bullshit, guys. Come on, pull your head out of your backside.
Yeah,
this is not what that's about. This is very real for these folks. Now, as we look at the folks we have on our roster and what we have going into Washington, I'm fortunate. I'm traveling up to Washington. A bunch of us are going up there. Ooh. We're going to have a great time. My man J-Buck's going up there. We're going to have a huge crowd up there. My man My man Tailgate Ted is hosting a bunch of us. We're going to have a great time. Man, you act like it's going to be 10 degrees up there. You are fat.
Again.
You are not going to be cold up there.
Again,
we're
Florida
58
boys.
Or 60, I think.
Anything under 70 is cold.
It's going to be a 60 by 45 day. Listen, I know you're a tropical people, menace to society, but you still are not going to be cold in 60 degrees.
First of all, I'm big sexy. And second of all, it is 77 degrees right now in Tampa, Florida. Just if you think I'm lying.
And what is it, 52 in Washington?
Hey, anytime you get on a plane and it's 77 and you get off a plane and it's 50-something, that is a drastic change.
Listen. It's going to be 66 for a high Sunday, 45 for a low.
All right.
Well, 45 for a low at 2 in the morning.
Exactly.
When we're in Georgetown drinking.
I'm pretty sure they're playing
after
at
1. A win. They're probably playing at 1.
But if it's overcast and windy,
you never know what
could happen. Go home tonight and change your AC from 77 to 67 and watch what it do.
Yeah.
My AC is already on 67 because I am legitimately fat. So I may claim big sexy, but I have got this stuff cold. Now, Corey, wake up down there, Mets fan.
Take your jacket.
Tell me, you told me coming in here you had been watching Washington. I know you hate Kirk Cousins.
Oh, yeah,
you guys
are
going to get in a street fight at some point. But other than Kirk Cousins, what do Bucs fans have to look at this week coming into the Redskins game?
Oh, I think they have to look at their running game. If they get their running game rolling, they're a much different team because, A, it takes the ball out of Kirk Cousins' hand, which is always really important. But also, I mean, if Alfred Morris – I'm not sure if Matt Jones is healthy this week. When they get Morris and Jones together – it's a pretty potent 1-2 punch because Matt Jones is a powerful runner. He can wear defenses down. Morris can help you out in the receiving game. He's also, he's also a big, tough runner, and it sets up a lot of play action. And Cousins is actually pretty good on the play action. That's the one area where I think he's at least an average quarterback is when he's in play action situations. And, I mean, when they get their running game rolling, they'll start to throw on first down. They can get teams biting. They can catch teams cheating up to the box, and that's – if DeSean Jackson's healthy, they can pop some big plays. But, of course, he's not healthy. I mean, their whole team's beat up right now. So I mean, the one thing I noticed is that they were playing a lot of guys that were on practice squads 2 and 3 weeks before that.
Hey, Corey, if you go to pewterreport.com, you can find the injury report daily. Just hey, throwing that out there.
Plug.
That to plug.
I don't know.
It's the first time I've done that all day.
The ginger badass is
I made over an hour. By the way, are you guys doing a watch party this week?
Don't you even start.
Well, look, not everybody can go to Washington.
We do a watch party every week, and every we were week. Doing it back when we weren't on an upswing with Jameis Winston. We weren't a Johnny-come-lately like you clowns are.
Whatever.
Well, listen, I love me some Pewter Report. I've always been a huge supporter of Pewter Report, and especially Mark Cook and Scott Reynolds. But listen, there's a bunch of these local cats that are jumping on a bandwagon real quick, and it's pissing me off.
Hey,
so.
all I'm asking is this. Sunday morning before you leave the hotel.
Yeah.
Tune your iPad, your laptop in the Yahoo Sports and stream the game.
Our tech guy Josh will set up a set of 100 computers to tune into the stream for you.
Who are you calling the game on?
Kirk Morrison. I actually am a Jaguar fan.
Did you say Jaguar? Who are they?
War.
I'm talking the way the stream is set up. I'm
Lord
supporting
have mercy.
The Jaguars. Like my stance is pro Jaguar. So I'll be backing Jackson.
Because they've got a lot of Florida guys on that team with Bortles and Telvin Smith.
That ball. Recognize UCF.
Yeah. What happened down there?
Oh, Jesus. Oh, George O'Leary lied about something again.
I gotta get
How
to
does
that,
he have a job?
I got to get to that one bar that's giving away the free beer, you know, until Central Florida. I know they're probably down to Old Milwaukee by now.
They closed.
Hey, you don't want to be there. Trust me. I've been there.
Hey, we're enjoying some delicious Bud Light here.
I was
going to
say, you're on Derek's tab right now. That whole pitcher's free. Keep
My man's drinking free Coke over here talking trash about the beer I bought. Get out of here, Plant City.
I think UCF, that's the perfect book. He started his career there 0-11. He's going to end it 0-12.
You think they would fire George?
I think he'll just retire.
He'll stepped down from athletic director.
He can't be fired. He has pictures of someone with a goat.
Here's going to be the problem.
He's killed a kid. Hey, he still has a job.
Allegedly.
Here's going to be
the kid is really dead.
Hey,
what are you talking about?
Here's going to be the problem with UCF and USF if it ever comes available. Not being in a Power 5 conference is going to really lessen the pool of potential coaches. Because it's
You can win quickly. Like Tom Herman, he was the offensive coordinator at Ohio State last year. This year he's at Houston. They're 6-0. He's in line for a big raise and a big job next year. I mean, he's going from the OC at Ohio State to a Power 5 job.
You can get a Tom Herman type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Justin Fuente was at Memphis.
He'll get a big job, though.
He's going to get a big job.
He'll get a big job. By the way, Justin Fuente is probably the most underrated coach in college football. He was actually Gary Patterson's offensive coordinator at TCU. He's done an outstanding job. And I'm going to go on record right now. I do the draft for Yahoo. Paxton Lynch is my number one rated quarterback for next year's
draft. He's from Deltona.
This draft.
Another Florida guy from Deltona. Yeah,
he's a
powerhouse, Deltona.
There's a reason why UCF's not winning. There was a kid in Deltona, 6'6" quarterback. They didn't even look at
him. He's a ball. I have him ahead of Jared Goff, Christian Hackenberg, Connor Cook, all the names.
What happened
here
to Christian Hackenberg?
He used to
He used to be like a prospect when he was a freshman.
You know who he reminds me a lot of? Joe Flacco.
Okay.
It'll be interesting.
Dude, I'm gonna put this tab on Joe Flacco because he got paid.
Yeah, what's weird is Joe Flacco had the best supporting cast in the NFL. When that year they won Super Bowl, you look at that team. I mean, they're
loaded.
I mean, they got guys. Now that they don't have those guys, and they're asking Joe Flacco to be elite and carry the team, what are they 1-4, 1-5? You know, so Hackenberg.
Joe can still spin the ball, though.
Hackenberg's not going to go in. Hackenberg can spin it. The problem is he's not going to go into a situation like Flacco did with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and Terrell Suggs
Ed Reed just made another interception. He ain't playing.
I mean, they might end up having 5-6 Pro Hall of Famers off that team.
Hey, Fish.
John or Jim?
That's me.
She don't care. She'll take either Harbaugh. Who's she kidding? She'll take the whole Harbaugh. If there's another Harbaugh, we don't even know.
She'll take Jack.
Mike Harbaugh, who wears glasses like Kirk's got on right now. She'll still take him.
She said, she said she likes a little diversity in her pants.
Hey, Derek,
like Jim's just going to give you the khakis every
day.
You
say she'll get with Cooper Manning?
Do what now?
She'll get with Cooper Manning also?
Cooper Manning now. Don't front on Cooper Manning. Now, Fish, Corey waited on Washington. What's your prediction? We're sitting here at about 9:38. What's your prediction coming into Washington? What do you expect to see for Bucks fans?
Well, Corey mentioned Alfred Morris, and I don't see it from Alfred Morris, because Alfred Morris doesn't score touchdowns. What we have to worry about this week from the running game standpoint, in my opinion, is if Matt Jones is healthy, and well, Mark threw the plug to PeterReport.com, who had the...
He full participation today with a toe injury.
There you go. So we talked about guys from Florida earlier. So Matt Jones played at UF, and Chris Thompson out of FSU, he is the receiving threat out of the backfield. Now, that's a guy who worries me a little bit because he's got speed. But... when it's all said and done, Jamison Crowder, in my opinion, is the guy on the Washington offense that the Bucs need to worry about, because I don't know who from the Bucs defense is going to match up against that speed. It's a young kid. He's a rookie coming out of Duke. He's got a lot of speed.
No one for football.
No, he is really, honestly, the most this is the guy for Bucs fans to watch this weekend from an offensive standpoint, is the guy who could potentially do something against this defense, because we know Kirk Cousins is going to Kirk Cousins, right, Corey? I mean, we know it's good for two turnovers.
Yeah, two, maybe a fumble loss, two. You know, Kurt, he can give the ball away in many different ways.
He's very flexible.
Yeah, he's versatile.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned, Derek, too, moving the pocket a little bit, because what I've seen from Washington's defense is their strength seems to be on the interior of the defensive line, so they'll collapse the pocket a little bit. So I'd like to see a little bit of Charles Sims and Doug Martin this week, see if they can get the run established, like to move the pocket a little bit, utilize the screen game, and from there I think they can utilize the play-action pass a little bit. But again, I'm going to go back to it, and I think this is it. This is the most winnable game right now. If we look at just on paper and what we've seen so far of the Washington, it's the most winnable game that the Bucs have, and the biggest opportunity for them to win big. And it's time for them to start the streak. It's not, Mark, you mentioned this earlier. You can't win a game and then lose three and then win another game. This is your opportunity.
Oh, you
coming
can.
Off
we
the
do that
week.
Year on year. You can absolutely yeah. You can win you can, one and lose seven.
You can lose eight in a row.
But it's that. Time. It's time at this point. It's time to go to 500, and then the right. next week we know we have to go on the road. I'm saying we, Mark.
Last time in Atlanta was 500. When was that?
I don't remember.
2012 with
Sean
Greg
was probably
Shiano.
On the team the last time.
Yeah.
Yep. So,
a long time ago.
Now, Mark Cook, weigh in, sir. What do you see happening this week in Washington?
Like Sean said, anything. I mean, there's
come
just
on.
No way to predict it. If you want me to make something up, Spike,
I do.
I'll do
I'd like you to
you.
Make something up. I'd like to, you to put them on
I
the,
think,
on the chopping
I think
block.
I don't worry about Jamison Crowder as much as the Buccaneers stopping the running game. I mean,
yes.
You look at Houston, a bad quarterback, a good receiver. But they were able to run the football, and that's the reason the Buccaneers fell apart there in the second half. They weren't able to stop the run. And so, you know, if they stop the run, I think they win this football game. That's got to be the key for the Buccaneers. And I'm sure that's exactly what Washington's saying, the same thing. We stop Doug Martin and try and make Jameis Winston beat us, and they feel pretty good that they're going to win that football game. But I think Jameis is going to have a pretty good game. I think the team is going to keep it. I think they're going to try and go in, obviously, with the same approach they went into against the Jaguars, where they're going to try and run some ball control, burn up some clock, let Jameis make some safe throws, kind of get him in a rhythm early. And but if not, you know, listen, they're going to have to drop back and chunk the ball. If Washington is successful with eight guys in the box and stopping Doug Martin, they're going to have to throw the ball, and that's going to fall back on the hands of Jameis Winston. But the defense has got to play better than it did in the Jaguars, particularly in the secondary, and I think they will. Hopefully Banks will be back. I think he'll be a good addition to that secondary, even if he doesn't play every snap at cornerback. I think just having him on the field will be a little bit. And again, I think it's Jenkins that goes back to the bench, because I think Lovie really wants to give Tim Jennings another shot and see what happens there. But and I predict Connor Barth will miss a field goal this week.
Oh, Lord have
mercy.
I'm just
saying, it's going to be 50 degrees.
But he's the savior. He's the savior.
Listen.
Don't start talking about kickers. Feesh gets all fired up about feet, about kickers.
I'm a Pat Murray guy.
Yeah, that's for the guy's opinion.
Pat Murray had ACL surgery.
Sean, what are your thoughts? I know you said it's a flip-em game, but I'm going to, of course, make you make a call. And I know that you don't want to tip your cap so much.
What's
but
the spread?
I don't know. Who cares?
3.5, Washington.
Washington's favored by 3.5?
So, your home,
so the home team spread.
Your home team spread.
Yeah.
That bothers me. I watch all the games. I watch all the teams, not just the Bucks. Washington's not a non-talented football team. This game kind of scares me. I hope that we win, because I look at the rest of our remaining schedule, and it's pretty salty. I mean, it's not like we got a whole lot of easy wins coming up on this thing. So I'm looking at Washington like we need to
get. We can call Dallas an easy win and piss Steve White off. Oh, man.
The thing is, what Dallas will we end up with?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, will that be Romo Dez back Dallas,
no, no
or will
Romo.
That be the current Dallas? There's a big difference in the two.
True story.
So I'm going to go Bucks win 24-21. I'm going to put that out there.
There it is.
And I'm gonna plug Sunday one more time. You guys, Sunday.
You're covering the Jaguars, I hear.
Yes, the Jaguars Bills game on Yahoo Sports.
And Mark actually said a Jaguar for you. That was
Jaguar.
I'm actually picking the Jaguars to win outright. They're getting 5 points. I think they rally around Gus Bradley. I think Buffalo has a lot of injuries. I'm picking Jacksonville to win outright. If you guys want to hear me, and I will be awesome on Sunday, I promise. Check out the broadcast.
I'm checking
stream.
It out. I'm definitely checking it out. Let me say this real quick. When I go back to keys to victory type deal, if you look at Len, somebody brought this up. I can't take credit for doing the research. But in the Buccaneers' 4 wins under Lovie Smith, they've had 5 or more sacks. Go back to that Washington game last year. They really harassed RG3 a lot in that game. So, obviously, getting pressure on the quarterback is going to be huge. But in the wins, it's been 5 or more sacks. They had 6 against the Jaguars. So they've got to continue to get pressure on the quarterback.
In the 2 games that they won, too, Jameis Winston's only thrown 20 passes per game. So we can't get into a shootout here where he's throwing 30-plus pass attempts per game. Got to run the football, establish
your
run.
Hole if you're chunking it.
Every game plan, who you're playing against matters. You know, there's some teams, Jacksonville, you're going to Jacksonville, we can run the football against Jacksonville, no matter what they do. So you don't throw the ball. That's not going to, you know, it varies from week to week. You know, so I think when you're looking at the overall game plan, understand the opponent comes into that equation.
Now, I'll tell you, I think the Jets had just 1 sack against the Redskins last week, but they went to a 4-3. They were playing the run, and they shut down their run game, and they've got the cornerbacks, obviously.
Yeah, they've got Revis
and Cromartie.
They
think they can handle Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, and the Washington offensive line doesn't give up sacks.
No,
and we're
don't.
Not talking about pressure, but it's like 6 or 7 sacks
what
that the Washington offensive line has given up all year.
The last few years, their line has been bad. Yeah. I mean, that's one reason RG3's, in walking boots every other
week. And they're still beat up on the offensive line as well with Trent Williams out.
You know, when it comes to Washington, when it comes to this game, we joke around about it all the time. We're not good enough, I don't think, yet to start talking about the esoterics of football. We don't consistently block. We don't consistently run.
What does that mean? I want to get better. What does esoterics mean?
That's an IT word.
Listen, I'm sorry I've confused the panel.
It's something to do with computers.
Esoterics are the less focused on details in this case, right? So
totally
normally,
was an IT
if,
word.
If we were the Patriots, we'd get into all the nuances of the game plan and all sorts of deep stuff. Right now, this team has to consistently learn how to tackle, consistently learn how to block, and not turn the ball over, right? Basics of football. So looking at what Washington has to, what we have to game plan against Washington, damn all that. We have to do our stuff. If we do our stuff, then we have a chance to compete. And Spike, I don't think Washington's a walk in the park at all, man.
Like, Spike about to throw his shoe at us, like we
yeah,
bush up there.
It's like he's got a Washington Redskins tattoo on him or something.
All I know is I'm going to steal esoterics.
You can use that. Hey, feel free to use that.
I don't even know what it means.
I still don't know what it means.
He told me what it means, and I don't know what it means.
I thought
but
it was like
use
a prehistoric bird that used
like,
to
I'm going
around.
To International Mall tomorrow. I'm just going to walk up to somebody in a store. Hey, the esoterics in this place are terrible.
Hey, Sean. Hey, work esoterics into your game broadcast.
Sean, be careful.
Work esoterics into your brain game broadcast,
please. Be careful if you say esthetician because you may get a Brazilian wax.
I know what
I do know that.
Like you haven't had a Brazilian wax.
My back every week.
Esoteric. Did you see how Alan Hearns pulled off that esoteric route against the Buffalo defender?
I'm going to McDonald's. You know what? Esoterically, I can't figure out what value meal I want tonight.
See, and this is the problem with Course Radio. Intellect gets made fun of.
I'm going to implement this word in all the wrong ways the rest of this week. This is what I'm just telling you. Yeah.
It'll be the drink word.
The good news is nobody's going to know you're doing it wrong because they don't know what it means.
I'm going to go get breakfast tomorrow. How would you like your eggs, sir?
Esoterically.
I want them esoterically.
I like them esoterically roasted. At any rate, I'm glad I could provide entertainment.
Matter of fact, can I have 20 esoterically fried wings, please?
Yeah, can we get some wings? Can we get some esoteric wings?
We're going to get some wings. Jackie's going to hook us up with some wings in a second. A big thanks to Winghouse, of course. But we're going to do the predictions. You said, what was it, 24 to what, Sean? Do you remember
21.
After making fun of me?
24-21. Can I shout out Winghouse?
Yeah, sure.
I will say this. I love Winghouse.
See, look at that.
I'm for real. I hate Hooters. I love
Winghouse.
Whoa. I hate.
Oh, Spike. Calm down, Spike.
I hate that place.
Listen, they ain't paying you either, man.
And I love Hooters because they gave me an option. And Crawford's my boy. I know he's sold or whatever. He's still working for whatever. Shout out to Crawford.
Hey, Sean, you know who likes Hooters? John Gruden likes Hooters.
Oh, don't make it mad.
He fits.
He
fits. I can understand how he likes it.
So I'm gonna be in Washington, like many of you guys.
Can I get
here.
A shirt? The
Bucks Princess will be
a
in
what
Washington.
Shirt? A Winghouse shirt? You want a tank top?
Yeah, they got like a.
They got a tank top for you, Sean?
I want a small too. Like I'm gonna put a small.
Sean gonna wear that medium, except for it's an extra large. So I'm going to weigh in. I'm going to go back down the line here and make you guys pick some score predictions. We always do predictive MVPs on offense and defense as well to wrap this thing up. I want to thank anyone who came out here. Thanks to you people that are listening to it across the world as well. I see a win because, by God, when I went to New Orleans, we won. And I know you guys were here, right? We won. Bucks Princess in the chat room is going to be there as well. There's going to be a bunch of folks out there supporting the Buccaneers. I do
Pewter
see a
Reports,
win.
Zach Shapiro will be there.
Pewter Reports going to be there? Yeah. Excellent.
Not
Zach,
me. I'm not traveling.
So Zach Shapiro will be
yeah,
there?
Zach
Excellent.
Will be there.
That'll be, he'll probably be in the press box. I'll be in the seat.
Oh, yeah, of
course. I'll be in the seat you pay for. So at any rate, it's good to have Pewter Report there. It's good to have real media there, which I appreciate you guys doing that. I do see a Bucks win. I don't know when this team is going to put 35 points like that on the board. I get a feeling this offense can do that at some point, can start putting points on the board. I don't know if this is the week. I think they're going to win by somewhere. I like Sean's spread of 3. I'd like to have a win of 10. I like 2 scores. It makes me feel good. I don't know that Washington's the team to do it against. But I see a ground chuck offense, which makes me very happy in my soul, because 4 yards per play on offense, and you win the game. That's the way it works.
Yep.
So I'm going to go ahead and say that it's going to be a 23-17 Bucks win this week. I would love to say Mike Evans is going to be my predictive MVP, but I think that's crap because I don't think he's got called out enough yet. I think he's going to be all Doug Martin all day, every day, and he's going to be the guy we ride on the defensive side of the ball. I do think he's going to be G-Mac. I think G-Mac is going to be the guy that steps up, and he always does. It's not that he doesn't, but I think at the times when he has to, the times when you're looking for him to do it, the times when you've got to stop that drive, I think he's going to do it this week. Let's go right back down the line. Mark, score. You didn't give us a score, did you?
No, but I'm kind of like with Fish over here. I think they can win this game big. I think, you know, a 30-17 game, you know, 30-20, something like that. I mean, they crushed him last year with no offensive coordinator.
Spike going to throw a shoe at you, dog. Keep
Secret
talking.
Redskins fan. And I think this is the game that Mike Evans does step up and have a good game. I think him and Jameis, we asked Jameis about that today. He said they've worked a lot during the offseason. They actually do have some chemistry, believe it or not. They haven't shown it yet. It's eventually going to break. Mike Evans is too talented to continue to play this mediocre. So I think Mike Evans is my predictive MVP. He definitely gets a score this week.
Good. That's great. Fish.
So 30-17.
I can't escape the Fish moniker. I just didn't want to be the Chris.
Do you want to go by Kreese? Chris?
Which
Kreese.
One are you? I
Who's
never
Kreese?
Know.
Well, the Chris Fisher, the guy who calls CBS.
John no, Kreese, head of the Cobra Kai Dojo.
I spell my name correctly. I don't put a C in Fisher, right? You spell your name
Little
correctly.
Little Fisher's my boy from
Look,
Channel 10.
I never do this. The Bucks are going to blow out Washington, the team from Washington, so to not be offensive for everyone here. And I never pick the Bucks to do this, but 34 to 13 Bucks. One, because wow. Kirk Cousins, right? But two, the Redskins give up 5 yards per run. So you've got Charles Sims. You've got Doug Martin. In my opinion, the MVP on the offense is not going to be Doug Martin. It's going to be Charles Sims. And I agree with you, Mark, that this is the week that Mike Evans could have a big game because the Washington secondary is completely beat up. They don't have D'Angelo Hall. They don't have Chris Culliver playing.
They got Deshaun Goldson.
And,
sarcasm.
And
he's
can't
good
cover.
For 30 yards of penalty.
He still misses tackles. Whatever. Good that he's a leader. It's fine. The Bucks are going to win 34-14. They're going to run the football. They're going to control the clock. The Washington will not score against his team. On defense, I'm predicting it right now. They've been close all year. Levante David is going to get a pick six this week against Kirk Cousins. He's going to take it to the house. The Bucks are going
to
win big.
The crowd.
No, I'm not. I'm not. This is the
first time. Fired.
Look, this is the first time.
I hope all that happens. I'm pulling for all of that, but yeah. I like to be right.
Yeah. Well, this is the first time that I've picked the Bucks to win big. I understand it. I was more worried. Sean mentioned earlier, I was more worried about the Jacksonville game because I think Jacksonville looks better on tape than Washington does. So, Bucks win big. Sorry.
Let's go.
Mark it down, and when this all happens,
I'll
y'all can
this.
Come
it'll
back
be,
and say I was right.
It'll be a fun plane ride back if they win 34-14. They have a good time.
It'll be a fun night in D.C. after.
34-13.
34-13. All right, Corey.
Yes,
Corey,
sir.
What do you think? I know your Mets, what are they up, 6-1 still?
6-1,
okay,
yeah.
Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
What do you see happening in the Capitol?
I think the Bucks are going to win. I'm going to use 26-23 in overtime. They get a lot of field goals.
Get some extra football. I like extra football.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a long overtime, too. I think it's going to be 20-20 going into OT.
Oh, that's
like, it's going to be like about 2 minutes left in OT when Connor Barth kicks his fourth field goal of the game.
We'll take it.
There's been more overtime games this year than I can remember ever.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like every week there's been one.
Well, because the NFL is just – the parity is here. I mean, it's real. So, I think I like Charles Sims, too, and I think if they can get him 6-7 receptions, he's got like a – like a Shane Vereen with speed thing going for me. I feel like he can do a lot of things out in the open field. He knows how to get open in the receiving game. I think Jameis trusts him. I think that's a trustful check down for him. Like, he'll check down to Charles Sims 5-6 times and feel good about it because Charles Sims is going to get first downs.
I can't get over Charles Sims tackling himself on his first catch.
Man, get out of here. You played with Mike Pittman.
That was funny.
My man got tackled by more grass than anyone in the damn NFL, and I love Mike Pittman.
Oh, man. Was that not funny? Like, who
it was funny. He takes himself into a tackle.
Dude.
Now, one of the things, hey, to your point down there, Corey and Chris, one of the things I've seen in the league, this sort of proliferation, there's another big dollar word for you, of screenplay.
I've heard of that word. I've heard of that word before.
Asterics.
Esoteric proliferation.
It's an esoteric word that I use from time to time. So the screen game, getting the ball to that guy behind the line of scrimmage allows our guys like Joe Hawley to get down there and knock people out and not get a penalty. And teams are starting to get hit to that scam. Because it used to be illegal blocker downfield, illegal blocker downfield. Everyone saw the tape, and the referees got apparently, you know, lectured on this. The Bucs got lectured too, and that is a great thing for Charles Sims. And I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily for Doug Martin out there either, because you get these guys on their horse, and Sean, this is probably real for you too. Long runs come as a result of what? Blocking downfield by wide receivers, right? That's the difference. And we got two guys out there who can absolutely plant people. They just got to do it.
Is one of them Lewis Murphy?
No,
Adam Humphries,
third guy. Adam, hey, he used to kill people back when they let him play.
Dante died.
Teams that run the ball successfully have a mindset going into the game that we're going to run the ball no matter what.
Yep.
Like, and the problem becomes if you don't have success early and you fall behind, it's very difficult
you give up on it.
To stay with the running game. So generally, when you have a team that runs the ball really well, they also have a great defense, because running the ball is a mindset. Like, you have to mentally be tougher than your opponent. Like, we're going to run this run 20 times a day. Yeah, 15 of these runs probably going to, and I'm just talking about one running play.
Sure.
We're going to run this run and play 20 times a day. 15 of these might be 3 yards or less, but the other five, we got to have big plays.
And you're telling your opponent that we're physically going to impose our will on you.
Alabama's done it forever.
And the offensive line responds to that in the fourth quarter, right? We look at a game like that where the offensive line, you just go, hey, listen, guys, we're just running the ball.
Yeah.
They strap them on. Let's go.
And we've asked these linemen, you know, what they like to do. They love to run the football. Of course they do. To see these guys. They love to look up and see number 22, you know, 20 yards down the field. And, you know, and it gets them jacked up if they can continually do it successfully.
I'll say this, though. In the modern-day NFL, to run the ball effectively, you have to have a quarterback that takes advantage of when the defense is unsound. Because what defenses will do now is they'll put more than you can block in the box. And so it won't be about being physical. It'll be just, we got more people down here. So you got to have a quarterback when those opportunities present themselves that get you out of the call run play into a pass play that takes advantage of it. And once you put enough of that on film, okay, now the defenses don't do that anymore. But, you know, now you get a fair fight when it comes to running the football.
But what the Bucs have done this year, and because that last game against Jacksonville, there were times when there were more people than the Buccaneers could block. What Doug has done this year that he hadn't done since his rookie year is he's able to make that extra guy miss.
Playing for that money.
Yeah.
Now, I was originally trying to wrap this up like an alleged professional in this, and we're coming up on the top of the hour.
Fringe.
Yeah, I'm so fringe, it's ridiculous. But I want to go back to this because I want to mention earlier, Sean, what I've seen a lot of times against the Bucs is they're rolling into a single high coverage. They're putting the extra guy in the box. We've got a guy out on an island out there, whether it's Mike or Vince. It doesn't really matter, right? And you said earlier, whether it's about getting to the outside and going to the nine or whether it's about getting across his face and coming to the middle, this is something that you have to have a quarterback get on the same page as the receiver, and they know, hey, if I look up and I see that single high safety, and you went through this cool thing where you rattled off play calls and stuff earlier, when do you see that happening? Because when you look at great quarterbacks and receiver combinations in the league, that's what they do. You want to show that? You want to walk that guy up and actually keep him there? I'm going to beat you, and you will not be able to do that again.
I think here's the thing that most people don't understand about NFL, and it comes to quarterbacks changing plays. Every team has tendencies. Like, every team that you play, when they're in a certain look on defense, they have a tendency to do one thing out of that look. Now, where it gets difficult is having a quarterback who can recognize what they're in and have enough memory recall to get us in the play that is best for that look. Now, in the NFL, even when you snap the ball and you got the perfect look, you still got to execute, you know, because they're paying everybody over there. Everybody you're playing against getting a check. But that's where the NFL kind of separates itself, is because you have all week, and if you're willing to put the time in to really go and learn, third and 4-6 when they're in the under front, they're always bringing Mike Sam. So we got to have a alternative for this, and then coach gives you one. Now when you get in the game, do you have enough common sense to realize that it is third and 4-6 and they're in this under front, so I got to get us out of this play. Like, that's what gets hard, because there's so many emotions going on game day. The games have so many ebbs and flows, and if you can't stay even keel through those ebbs and flows, you miss things. And how many times in the last all of us have been Buck fans for a long time. How many times has the game come down to two or three plays? Even though there were 100 and some plays in every game.
All the time. Six games last year.
And the teams that are successful, and why New England has been so successful, is on offense, they have a guy that's going to be right 95% of the time.
He's always going to make that right decision.
He's able throughout the game to stay in a mindset of the next play is the most important play. So I'm going to get us in plays that are advantageous for us. We have a young player who you want to give him those responsibilities, but when you do, turnovers happen. Because he's thinking about a lot. That's why I gave that play call. It's a lot going on. Like, nobody in this room can tell me what I said the snap count was on when I called that play. And that was just one play.
It was on one.
So when you think about two. Having 65, 70 plays and having that much mental fortitude that has to go into every play to really be successful, because you never know the play when you get it right, it's going to result in a touchdown. Because the first time that they're unsound and you make the right check, we might have somebody matched up one-on-one that turns into a touchdown. You know, so that's the growing process, you know, for these teams. And we're in the middle of it. And hopefully, you know, we can win enough so that we don't have to make any change. And we can see these young guys grow up. Because people forget this about now when we're really good. Brooks and Sapling didn't win many games the first couple
early,
years.
It was brutal.
Like, before we changed the colors, like, they were pretty bad in that other color. So
yeah, but I mean, we changed colors. Time. Why aren't we winning? That was the answer, right?
Well, we changed colors again, right?
That was correlation.
It's the slogan.
It was correlation, not causation. I want to thank this entire
will you
panel.
Stop with these words.
Listen, I'm trying to educate some people here. Corey, causation. We got at Corey Long down there. We got at Bucks Brief, Chris Fisher down here. Big thanks to him for letting me jump on his podcast and stuff. My man Mark Cook, the Ginger Badass, at Mark Cook 1970. Sean King breaking cameras, apparently, at pewterreport.com, at real Sean King, because apparently someone else grabbed Sean King's handle. So at any rate, I want to thank you guys for tuning in. Thank you guys who came out to the show. It was a good time. We will try and do this again at least a couple times throughout this year. It was a fun time. And until next week, we will see you guys. Many of us are going to D.C. We'll send some Periscopes out there. Follow us on Periscope, on Twitter. All you guys are on Periscope and Twitter as well. Make sure you get out there. We got a great media and pseudo fringe media out there doing a lot of great work for you Bucks fans. It wasn't that way 10 years ago, and it is that way now. You have a lot of content. Tune in. My man Spike on the mic doesn't do Bucks content, but he's an award-winning podcaster. Definitely give him some love. He's probably wearing a green thong right now. We just don't know. But I'm looking forward to hanging out and having a beer with J-Buck up in the Capitol next week. So anyway, for all of these guys in the crowd, this is Old School from WhatTheBuck.net, and we are out of here.